Okay, we are now live. Good morning and welcome to the November 7th joint meeting of the California Air Resources Board, the California Transportation Commission, and the Department of Housing and Community Development. First, we will begin roll call with CAR board members. Then I will turn it over to CTC Chair Carl Guardino, followed by Director Gustavo Velasquez of HCD. Clerk of the Board, please call the roll for the Air Resources Board.
Dr. Balms.
Here.
Mr. De La Torre. Mr. Eisenhut.
Here.
Senator Flores.
Flores here.
Assemblymember Garcia.
Present.
Mr. Guerra.
Here.
Ms. Hurt.
Hurt present.
Mr. Krakow. Mr. Rechtschaffen.
Here.
Dr. Pacheco Warner. Supervisor Perez. Senator Stern. Dr. Shaheen.
Here.
Ms. Takborian. Supervisor Vargas. Chair Randolph.
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Chair Guardino, please have your clerk call the roll for your commissioners.
Thank you. Douglas, would you please call the roll?
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner Bradshaw.
Present.
Commissioner Cruz. Commissioner Eager.
Here.
Commissioner Elliott. Commissioner Falcone. Vice Chair Grisby.
Present.
Commissioner Lugo. Commissioner Mann. Commissioner Tiffany.
Here.
Chair Guardino.
Present.
And our ex officios, Senator Cortese, Assemblymember Wilson. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Director Velasquez, please introduce your team.
Thank you. With us, we have Clay Kurdjoff from my team and Sohab, who will be presenting today important topics on our progress at HCD.
All right, thank you. I'll now go over a few housekeeping items. We are conducting today's meeting in person, as well as offering remote options for public participation, both by phone and in Zoom. Anyone who wishes to testify today in person should fill out a request to speak card available in the foyer and turn it in to a board assistant as soon as possible. If you are participating remotely, you will raise your hand in Zoom or dial *9 if calling in by phone. The clerk will provide further details regarding how public participation will work in a moment. For safety reasons, please note the emergency exit to the rear of the room through the lobby. In the event of a fire alarm, we are required to evacuate this room and immediately exit the building through the front entrance when the all clear signal is given. We will return to the auditorium and resume the meeting. A closed caption feature is available for those of you joining us in the Zoom environment. In order to turn on subtitles, please look for a button labeled CC at the bottom of the Zoom window, as shown in the example on the screen now. I would like to take this opportunity to remind everyone to speak clearly and from a quiet location, whether you are joining us in Zoom or calling in by phone. I will now ask the board clerk to provide more details on today's procedures.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm one of the board clerks here at CARB, and I will be providing additional information on how public participation will be organized for today's meeting. We will first be calling on any in-person commenters who have turned in a request to speak card, and then I will be calling on commenters who are joining us remotely. If you are joining us remotely and wish to make a verbal comment on today's item, you will need to be using Zoom webinar or calling in by telephone. If you are currently watching the webcast on CalSpan, but you wish to comment remotely, please register for the Zoom webinar or call in. Information for both can be found on the joint meeting public agenda for today's meeting. To make a verbal comment, we will be using the raise hand feature in Zoom. If you wish to speak on the item, please virtually raise your hand as soon as the item has begun to let us know you wish to speak. To do this, if you're using a computer or tablet, there is a raise hand button. And if you are calling in on the telephone, dial *9 to raise your hand. Even if you previously indicated which item you wish to speak on when you registered, you must raise your hand at the beginning of the item. When the comment period starts, the order of commenters will be determined by who raises their hand first. We will call each commenter by name and will activate each commenter's audio when it is their turn to speak. For those calling in by phone, we will identify you by the last three digits of your phone number. We will not show a list of remote commenters. However, we will be announcing the next three or so commenters in the queue, so you are ready to testify and know who is coming up next. Please note you will not appear by video during your testimony. I would also like to remind everyone to please state your name for the record before you speak. We will have a time limit for each commenter and will begin the comment period with a 2-minute time limit. And during public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen. For those calling in by phone, we will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left and then when your time is up. If you wish to submit written comments today, please visit CARB's Send Us Your Comments webpage or look at the public agenda on our webpage for links to send those documents electronically. Written comments will be accepted until the conclusion of the meeting. And if you experience any technical difficulties, please call 805-772-2715 so that an IT person can assist. This number is also noted on the public agenda. Thank you. I'll turn it back to Chair Randolph now.
Thank you. Today's joint meeting addresses state initiatives to align our actions pursuing goals for climate, transportation, and housing. We'll be hearing three interrelated presentations. These presentations will share data on the challenges of reducing vehicle miles traveled, potential state actions to align transportation spending with climate goals as part of the update to CAPTI, and local and regional innovations made possible with partner agencies under the REAP 2.0 program. We will be allocating time at the conclusion of these presentations for public comment and dialogue. As we go through today's meeting, I ask all of you to think critically about these planning and investment processes to identify if and how we can more meaningfully coordinate our policies to jointly advance our respective missions. As we carry our missions forward, each of our agencies faces its own challenging goals, whether to adapt California's massive transportation system to challenging fiscal realities, accelerating the production of affordable and location-efficient housing to meet the needs of all Californians, or improve air quality and public health and meet our state's world-leading climate goals. And as we tackle all this, we'll be working to do so in ways that support California's economy and advance racial and environmental justice. We can't understate the magnitude of this collective work and the challenges and opportunities that we face carrying it out. We all recognize that we will be having a significant administration change at the national level in January. California has benefited and will continue to benefit from the work of the Biden-Harris administration to bring investments to clean the air and fight climate change with the implementation of the IIJA and the IRA. And as Governor Newsom said yesterday, it is our responsibility to uphold the rule of law, and we will continue to fill our obligations under the Clean Air Act to protect Californians. Our goals are ambitious, necessary, and deeply interrelated. I hope today's meeting fosters an inclusive and action-oriented discussion to identify concrete next steps we can take together to accomplish these goals. Those next steps will shape state and regional priorities, and more importantly, whether and how those priorities are implemented. Now I'd like to turn it over to Chair Guardino to share his opening remarks.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. It is such a delight to come back together as we do twice a year. Good morning to everyone in the audience and to our board members, fellow commissioners, and directors Velasquez, Cliff, and Taylor. The California Transportation Commission is delighted to join CARB and HCD once again to discuss our shared policy goals and collaborative work efforts. In particular, I'd like to welcome our newest California Transportation Commissioners, Zahira Mann and Jason Elliott. This is their first joint meeting of our three organizations. As we draw toward the end of the year, we approach a familiar and important undertaking at the Commission, project evaluations for our Senate Bill 1 competitive transportation funding programs. Over the next few months, our team will review project nominations, and crucially, we rely on CARB and HCD staff to help us review project benefits relating to air quality, climate, housing, equity, and land use. This is the second cycle of SB1 projects that have been shaped by actions in the Climate Action Plan for Transportation Infrastructure, or CAPTI. As you heard at our joint meeting last November, we have made tremendous strides implementing CAPTI, increasing our investments in multimodal projects and projects that reduce vehicle miles traveled. I can't help but smile at Darwin and his team for all the work they have done. Projects like the I-405 Corridor Community Bus Service Improvement Program in Los Angeles County is a prime example of CAPTI in action. When we awarded $32 million to this project, which will reduce greenhouse gases and criteria pollutant emissions by procuring 75 electric buses, bus boarding islands, and shelters while providing real-time transit service information. With more than $1 billion available in the upcoming SB1 funding cycle, we're excited to make additional investments that make our communities safer, promote equity, and support the economy, while helping our regional partners make progress towards implementing their regional transportation plans and sustainable communities strategies. We look forward to today's discussion on how we continue our strong partnerships as leaders in promoting climate-friendly transportation and solutions with other state, regional, and local transportation agencies in addition to the CAPTI update. Once again, we're happy to share this space with you, and as we look forward to today's discussions, I just want to thank again our leader, our Executive Director, Tanisha Taylor, at the Commission, and the amazing team that she has serving our state. Thank you.
Next, we'll hear opening remarks from HCD Director Gustavo Velasquez.
Good morning. Buenos dias. I want to express my appreciation to Chairwoman Randolph and Chair Gardino and everyone that has joined us here today from ARCARB and CTC. I want to say that I've been coming to these meetings for about 4 years, and I do see the impact in our ability to achieve our housing, transportation, and climate goals. We have a very robust affordable housing pipeline at the moment. More than 30,000 homes are being built as we speak, just with public assistance subsidy from the State Housing Department. But thousands more have already been completed, and they are welcoming new residents as we speak. I probably attend at least one grand opening ceremony a week of our affordable housing projects. And what I see is not just the volume of affordable housing that is being built. I see in the majority of these projects that are being built in infill sites, I see that we are being built homes for the lowest income households, where is the largest shortage of housing in the state. I see projects that are closing the racial and income divide that is persistent and prevalent in our state. I see projects with closer proximity to the job services amenities that residents need, which means we are lowering vehicle miles traveled. I see projects that are in great proximity to a bus stop with frequency, and probably buses that are using cleaner energy, or even better, projects that have close proximity to efficient rail stops. I see projects that are being built with less parking. We don't love parking that much. And if there is parking, those parking slots have receptacles to charge EVs. I see projects that are being built with green roofs and sustainable building materials. I see this every week when I attend these grand openings, which means that we have successes in our state's efforts to build affordable, climate-smart housing that expand access to high-opportunity neighborhoods and quality transportation for residents regardless of their economic status. Now, I want to highlight quickly in my opening remarks two other areas where we are making good progress. Shortly after our April meeting, HCD published a very important report. It's called California's Housing Future 2040, which offers recommendations to the state legislature to strengthen the 7th Regional Housing Needs Allocation Cycle, RENA, to better meet housing production, equity, and climate goals. Let's remember, by incorporating factors such as housing cost burden and overcrowding and emphasizing the shared duty to further fair housing, the sixth cycle, the cycle that we are right now, of RENA targets resulted in a higher projected housing need that more accurately reflected the depth of California's housing crisis. The RENA cycles before this sixth cycle were not very good. But when Governor Newsom took office, things started to change. RENA has evolved into a powerful housing and climate tool. I continue to say this. I believe RENA is a credible, important tool to lower greenhouse gas emissions in our state. And that RENA targets unlocks new opportunity housing in high opportunity neighborhoods in areas with quality transit. Think about this. Today, 34% of the state housing is located in high quality transit areas. But thanks to the planning efforts of the current RENA cycle, nearly 60% of planned homes in our local housing element site inventory are now in high quality transit areas with a greater share of low and moderate income units. This will meet the state's housing needs and reduce per capita VMT by 2030 and represents a substantial contribution towards the scoping plan's goal of 25% reduction in VMT below 2019 levels. The second area I want to highlight is Executive Order N224, which Governor Newsom announced in July, which directed state agencies to reduce costs, remove barriers, unlock resources, and measure the climate benefits of new infill housing. These efforts to increase infill housing will help build vibrant downtowns with housing near transportation hubs and job centers, creating a more sustainable future. Opportunity to leverage the progress that we have made in removing barriers to new housing, enforcing state housing laws, and unlocking the potential of publicly owned lands. We have two examples of great projects. On the screen, you can see the Mulberry Garden Senior Apartments here in Riverside. It's about 150 senior homes. That is the first development to begin construction on excess state land in Southern California. It's very important to continue to make excess surplus state land for affordable housing. And the Mulberry Garden Senior Apartments is a great example of that. Our second example is the Sugar Pine Village in South Lake Tahoe, which once completed will provide 248 units for this community, transform what was once vacant state-owned land into affordable housing for families and workers in the Tahoe region. Sugar Pine Village exemplifies the type of project envisioned under the governor's executive order by utilizing excess state sites for affordable housing, connecting to regional public transportation, and taking advantage of innovative modular construction to contend with the Tahoe region's shorter building season. So again, these are just a few examples of the progress we're making in collaboration with you, your organizations, and for that I ask all of us to continue to be bold in our efforts to leverage our investments into policies and programs that deliver outcomes across our diverse interests. Clean transportation, housing, climate, health, and equity, which are all interlinked, and we can do and will continue to do more, again, to share our common interest and achieve better outcomes for the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate those remarks from both of you. Our first item today will be a brief update on the progress that staff at our three agencies have made in response to previous joint meeting discussions, as well as other interagency coordination throughout the year. I invite CARB's Executive Officer, Dr. Stephen Cliff, to give the update. Dr. Cliff.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. As the Chair mentioned, this report describes the work that staff at our three agencies have conducted between joint meetings. This includes an interagency coordination on our various policies and programs, as well as action items that are identified in direct response to previous joint meeting discussions. The work done by our staff between joint meetings reflects the collaboration between our agencies to advance our shared goals and is what makes these meetings worthwhile. At our last joint meeting on April 11, we heard from HCD, CTC, the Energy Commission, and the Governor's Office of Business and Economic Development on the state's planning and investments to support the transition to zero emission freight and the stakes for frontline communities and fair housing. We also discussed the pipeline of transportation projects that are scoped, designed, and proposed for funding through regional and state prioritization process. The Association of Monterey Bay Area Governments presented on prioritizing projects for their regional transportation plan, and Caltrans presented on the Caltrans System Investment Strategy, or CSIS, a new strategy to align Caltrans project prioritization with state climate goals. We concluded the April 11 joint meeting with several action items for staff based on the outcomes and discussion from the meeting. Since our April meeting, staff have made progress on several fronts. First, it was requested that subsequent joint meetings provide updates on the implementation of the work highlighted in the Sustainable Freight and Community Impacts item. We will begin to provide regular updates at joint meetings in 2025. Next, the April joint meeting found a need for CARB, CTC, and HCD to collaborate with Caltrans to expand land use resources in the implementation of CSIS. Staff are coordinating with Caltrans on land use resources and the process for the next updates of CSIS. We hope to hear about the outcomes from Caltrans at a future meeting. Lastly, the meeting also concluded with directing staff to highlight transformative state programs and investments that achieve multiple state climate, housing, and transportation goals in response to this directive. Today's meeting will include a presentation by HCD on the Regional Early Action Planning Grants, or REAP 2.0. I will now give an update on the other relevant interagency coordination efforts. At the spring and fall joint meetings in 2023, we heard from HCD on their progress for developing California's Housing Future 2040 report on the next Regional Housing Needs Allocation, or RENA. On April 16 of this year, HCD published the final report. The report provides recommendations to the legislature, including statutory changes and adjustments to HCD processes in order to lay the groundwork for creating future homes and detail how to strengthen alignment of RENA with data, processes, and timelines of sustainable community strategies and regional transportation plans. Collectively, the RENA modifications aim to more accurately account for the housing needs of existing and future residents, promote and streamline housing development, affirmatively further fair housing, advance the state's climate goals, and substantially address California's housing shortage. As Director Velasquez mentioned on July 31st, Governor Newsom issued Executive Order N-224, which directs state agencies to implement a range of tasks intended to advance housing production in infill areas. The executive order seeks to lower cost and increase options for infill housing and to provide more tools and resources to do so. I know our three agencies are very excited about this executive order because infill housing is a key part of the solution to address our agency's goals. Infill housing helps to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by reducing vehicle miles traveled, avoids conversion of natural and working lands to development, creates more homes near jobs, schools, and opportunities, and in many cases lowers energy and water demand from the built environment. I will highlight a couple of areas of work to implement N224 where our agencies will be working together. One is to identify strategies to leverage federal funding to promote housing decarbonization and adaptive reuse implemented by the administration's Housing and Decarbonization Working Group. Another is the development of a framework for a statewide mitigation bank that could use infill housing as a strategy for mitigating the environmental impacts of transportation and housing projects under CEQA. This item will be implemented by a multi-agency task force convened by the Governor's Office of Land Use and Climate Innovation, formerly known as OPR. We look forward to reporting out or diving into some of this work at future meetings. That concludes the progress report on interagency coordination, and I'll give it back to you, Chair Randolph.
We will now do the next presentation on our agenda, and then we will have public comment and discussion. So the next item on the agenda is item number 2, state initiatives to align climate, housing, and transportation. Once again, if you are here with us in the room and wish to comment, please fill out a request to speak card as soon as possible and submit it to a board assistant. If you are joining us remotely and wish to comment on this item, please click the raise hand button or dial *9 now. We will first call on in-person commenters, followed by any remote commenters when we get to the public comment portion of the item. This item consists of 3 presentations that each address a vital effort to align our work on climate, housing, and transportation. First, CARB will present data on California's progress toward implementing SB 375, or the Sustainable Communities and Climate Protection Act, as required by SB 150. Recently, CARB updated the SB 150 dashboard with new data from 2020 to 22, which captures the impact of the pandemic on key metrics, including vehicle miles traveled, or VMT, greenhouse gas reductions, and travel choices in each region. The data shows that per capita VMT is still going up, leading to more pollution and reflecting that Californians still need to rely heavily on cars and travel significant different distances to get where they need to go. Tracking these metrics is vital to identify issues in implementing regional plans that aim to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, promote sustainable development, promote equity and racial justice, and improve the overall quality of life for all Californians. As indicated in the 2022 scoping plan, there is an urgent need to reverse the overall trajectory of increasing vehicle miles traveled to advance climate goals and equity in California. Achieving carbon neutrality by 2045 requires changing land use and transportation patterns by implementing sustainable community strategies. Successful implementation of those sustainable community strategies requires actions by all levels of government, including state, regional, and local entities. The state is taking important steps toward reducing vehicle miles traveled, which requires targeting state funds more intentionally to projects that reduce VMT. To describe those steps, the State Transportation Agency is here today to present updates to California's Climate Action Plan for Transportation Infrastructure, or CAPTI. CALSTA first adopted CAPTI 3 years ago to align California's transportation spending with the VMT reduction objectives of CARB scoping plan. 2 years later, however, CALSTA's progress on CAPTI's implementation found that there is more work to do. I'm hopeful that today's presentation about updating CAPTI can be a fruitful basis for exploring opportunities to strengthen the actions the state is taking with an eye on VMT reduction. Also crucial to achieving our climate goals are local and regional innovation, not only with regard to transportation projects, but also in land use and housing. To that end, our final presentation will address California's Regional Early Action Planning Grant Program of 2021, or REAP 2.0. REAP 2.0 is a grant program implemented by HCD and partner agencies, including CARB, to accelerate the production of infill housing and reduce VMT. 2 years ago, HCD gave a presentation at one of these joint meetings describing their plan and vision for implementing REAP 2.0. Now we have an opportunity to explore some of the program's early outcomes. Because REAP 2.0 recognizes the inextricable links between our agency's housing, transportation, and climate goals, exploring REAP's outcomes can be a foundation for considering what else our agencies can do to advance those shared goals. I will now turn it over to staff for the presentations.
All right, thank you and good morning, everyone. My name is Carrie Connect. I am the chief of the Transportation and Land Use Planning Branch at the California Air Resources Board, where I coordinate the SB 375 program and other associated efforts. All right, next slide, please. Today, I will share an update of progress meeting the goals of SB 375 from CARB's SB 150 data dashboard, including an overview of key transportation and land use trends, as well as a few themes and challenges. Under SB 375, each of California's 18 regional metropolitan planning organizations, or MPOs, creates a sustainable communities strategy, or SCS, to chart a path to meet the per capita regional greenhouse gas emission reduction targets that have been set by CARB. Under SB 150, CARB must submit a report to the legislature every 4 years. The report uses regional and statewide metrics to assess progress on GHG emissions and strategies to meet the targets. The report also identifies best practices and challenges in achieving the targets and discusses the impact of recent state policies and funding. CARB has completed two reports, one in 2018 and one in 2022. The most recent report examined greenhouse gas emissions and over two dozen supporting metrics to consider the progress being made. Its key conclusions were that more focus is needed at every level of government, working in an aligned way to focus on implementation of the elements of regional sustainable communities strategies that best help reduce vehicle miles traveled. The key drivers of change in these plans include housing and land use strategies to change transportation patterns. It greatly helps to change development patterns, as well as pricing strategies and increased investment in transportation options that reduce the need to drive. These SCS plans represent the collective vision of cities, transportation and transit agencies, and local residents for meeting economic, equity, environmental, housing, transportation, and public health goals. When implementation falls behind, all of these important goals are put at risk. The report found that to make these a reality, more aligned implementation effort is needed across state, regional, and local actions. Today, I am here to provide a midterm update with more recent data, but spoiler alert, many of the original themes still remain true. To share updated data more frequently than every 4 years, CARB has created an online data dashboard where you can access this information yourself. The dashboard includes six themes: passenger vehicle miles traveled, or VMT, and GHG emissions per capita, transportation choices and travel patterns, housing choices, regional growth, accessible communities, and investment in transportation choices and development. Progress on these topics varies by region and over time, as you can see for yourself online. There, you can interact and visualize the data for all MPO regions for about 18 metrics. Users can also download the data in their preferred format, such as Excel or an image. So let me begin now by sharing an update on the passenger vehicles, or light-duty VMT and GHG, under the SB 375 program, which are critical metrics to measure progress in meeting regional greenhouse gas emission reduction targets. This chart shows the statewide per capita light-duty VMT in yellow and GHG emissions in turquoise under SB 375 relative to 2005 levels. SB 375 accounting here specifically excludes the impact of state vehicle regulations adopted since 2009 to ensure there is no double counting of reductions and to focus in on vehicle travel trends. This chart gives us an idea of how these have changed over the past few years. We can observe that at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, GHG and VMT per capita fell to 18 and 12% below 2005 levels, respectively. Data for 2021 and 2022 show that they have rebounded since then, though they have not quite reached pre-pandemic levels. Next, I will discuss the trends in transit ridership per capita, commute mode, and vehicles per household. This next slide shows how people travel to work. The largest share in all years has been single occupancy vehicle travel, that turquoise part of the bar there. And statewide, commute mode shift split remained relatively steady between 2010 and 2019. Then in the early pandemic years, there was a more significant dip in drive-alone commuting, corresponding with a substantial increase in the rate of working from home, that diagonal striped line at the top. In 2022, the statewide work-from-home mode share decreased to 17% from its 22% peak in 2021, but this is still higher than the pre-pandemic average of 5 to 6%. This slide shows California's transit ridership trends between 2005 and 2022. Until 2014, transit ridership per capita stayed relatively flat, with a dip around 2009 corresponding with a budget crisis that led to cuts in state transit funding. Transit ridership started to trend downward again between 2014 and 2019 and then dropped steeply in 2020. Starting in 2022, however, per capita ridership began to rebound, but it is still far below pre-pandemic levels. Turning now to vehicles per household, higher vehicle ownership typically leads to higher VMT, for instance, because of less household carpooling. This slide shows the number of vehicles per household in all MPO regions. The number of vehicles available per household remained relatively steady, around 2 vehicles per household, trending slightly upward between 2015 and 2022. This next series of slides shows a series of housing-related metrics. Building enough homes in the right places that are affordable to a broad range of people is one key to reducing driving by making it easy for people to live near where they go every day. This slide illustrates new housing units and the share that are multifamily in turquoise versus single family in yellow. A more diverse mix of multifamily and single family homes can support compact neighborhoods with better access between homes, shopping, and workplaces, with more of a mix of household incomes to improve access to opportunity, and with improved transit service to reduce VMT. As you can see, the number of housing units built started to slow down in 2008 due to the economic recession, and then has been gradually rising with a brief drop in 2021. In recent years, the statewide trend also shows an increase in the share of multifamily housing units. So, is enough housing being permitted to meet housing needs? To guide housing planning, every region receives a regional housing needs or RENET determination by income level from HCD. This slide compares housing permits that were issued in turquoise compared to those targets in yellow. At the top of the chart, you see total housing needs statewide relative to number of permits. As you can see, total housing production is not meeting the need in California. Moving down the chart, we break down permits by income category. When looking at the RENA allocation by income, you see that the above moderate income permitting activity meets or exceeds the targets. However, we are still falling short of our overall goal due to a slower pace of permits for the lower income housing levels. And this shortfall in housing, particularly for low and moderate income households, will likely mean that people have a harder time finding homes near where they want to live, which translates in part to the need to drive more than they otherwise would. And the significant impact that this can have on both climate and equity shows how important it is for local, regional, and state agencies to work together to help implement these regional plans, including the housing and land use strategies. And unfortunately, what this means is that as a state, we have not been able to bring down the housing cost burden metric, at least not at this time. This metric reflects the percentage of households that spend more than 35% of their income on housing costs. In 2022, 45% of households in California spent more than 35% of their income on housing, taking away from their ability to spend on other essential needs and possibly reflecting the need to live further from their daily destinations. Returning now to the themes that we see, these SCS plans are important and necessary, but alone they are not sufficient. California needs a stronger focus on implementation of the strategies that will reduce vehicle miles traveled and achieve the other benefits outlined in the regional SCSs. There must be more tools to support this implementation. CAPDAI and REAP 2.0, which you will hear about next, are examples of the types of efforts that can be helpful. When plans are not implemented, all of the benefits that they could have, saving people money and time, reducing air pollution and energy use, and making it easier for people to get to work, to school, to the doctor, those do not come to pass. And many of these have important implications for equity. Strategies to produce more affordable housing and invest in alternative modes of transportation in ways that reduce the need to drive can also begin to address entrenched inequities experienced by California's Black, Indigenous, people of color, low-income, and underprivileged communities. We need to achieve better alignment across local, regional, and state government entities so that we are all working towards these same important goals. With that, thank you. I'm looking forward to our discussion of CAPDAI and REAP 2.0 as two programs that could help support implementation to achieve these SCS goals. And with that, I will hand the microphone over to Mr. Musavi.
Thank you so much, Carrie, for that presentation. And I think that is a really good setup for the importance of the work we're doing on CAPDAI. Thank you so much for having me, board members and commissioners. My name is Darwin Musavi. I'm the Deputy Secretary of Environmental Policy and Housing Coordination at CalSTA, and really excited to be here and give you an update on CAPDAI today. So before I get started, I did want to take a moment to thank and acknowledge the various teams that make the CAPDAI work happen. So all of the agencies represented here, HCD, CARB, and I think particularly of note, CTC and Caltrans, given their leadership role in some of the actions, play a key role in making CAPDAI happen and the work that we do on our Climate Action Plan for Transportation Infrastructure a reality. In particular, I did want to note the presence of Marlon Flournoy, our brand new deputy director for Planning and Modal Programs at Caltrans. I think I might be the first person who gets to introduce him with that title publicly. So congratulations to Marlon on his new role. Marlon won't be presenting with me, but is here for questions on Caltrans actions at the end when we get to that section. So thank you for joining us, Marlon. With that, we can go into our agenda. Next slide, please. All right, so I'll start off with a quick overview and implementation progress of where we are on CAPDAI, and then go into what we see as what's next for CAPDAI, and then give some examples of what that might look like as we move forward. Next slide, please. So just as a reminder, I know we've presented at the joint meeting now multiple times on this item, but for folks who might be newer to the meeting or not have as much familiarity, just wanted to do a quick recap. So the Climate Action Plan for Transportation Infrastructure provides a holistic framework for aligning our state infrastructure investments with climate health and equity goals. It was born out of an executive order in 1919 that the governor signed in 2019 that asked our agency to leverage state transportation investments to help meet climate change goals. We then underwent a multi-year process to create this action plan to implement that executive order. It includes a set of guiding principles. It's at the vision of where we're trying to go to align our investments with climate change goals, and then has a specific set of 34 actions in it to do so. That plan was adopted in July 2021, and we have spent our time since implementing that plan. In terms of that implementation progress, you can see that we put out an annual report in 2022, and then another one in 2023, showing our progress. We also worked with the Mineta Transportation Institute to conduct a study to evaluate how that progress was going. And we were able to actually implement all 34 of those actions much faster than anticipated. So we're really excited about that. We had a 3 to 7 year timeline for implementation, but sitting 3 years removed from the adoption of CAPDAI, I'll give you a sneak peek. The next slide says that we completed all 34 actions. We're really excited for that. I do want to note that completion of those actions does not mean that the work on each of those topics is done, but that the body of work that was described and called for specifically by that language has been completed. In terms of the work we see that those 34 actions have achieved, the Mineta Transportation Institute study, next slide please, outlines some of the progress we've made based on the implementation of those actions. So on emissions, we see that our transportation investments are resulting in a smaller amount of greenhouse gas emissions and vehicle miles travel emitted from the suite of programs. The nuance of those words is important because the net is still a positive increase of emissions of the suite of investments, but the amount of emissions emitted is a significant decrease. So the progress there, which you can see in the Mineta Transportation Institute report in detail on our website, is significant in terms of the amount of difference we saw cycle over cycle of our investments and moving towards closer to VMT and GHG neutrality of our transportation emission or our transportation investments. On equity, we saw an increase in multimodal project investments, resulting in positive transportation equity outcomes, particularly in disadvantaged communities. So we were really excited to see that in terms of our investments. And then all the while, we were able to do this while maintaining job quantity and job quality based on our analysis in the pre to post CAPDAI timeline. So we've had various conversations on and speculation about what would this do for jobs. And the change in terms of those investments was within margins of error in terms of what that looks like. So that brings us to today. So we've reflected on the progress we've made. And as mentioned, we've made some significant progress, but we know, given all the data that Carrie shared, that we have a long way to go to actually meet our climate change goals on VMT reduction. So we thought it was incumbent upon us to take our action plan and look at what's next now that we've completed those 34 actions and chart a path forward for where we go from here. So we have committed to an update of CAPDAI, which will include a new set of actions to further implement the existing CAPDAI framework. So we're at this point, we think the direction we're going is working. We're seeing progress. We're not interested in reevaluating the framework itself, but thinking about what additional actions can we commit to implement that existing framework to further show progress. We have spent this year doing outreach to hear from our stakeholders as to what that should look like, what types of actions should we be committing to. The spring of this year, we held a series of in-person and virtual listening sessions with, I believe, over 400 participants across all of them, all of those listening sessions, to analyze and create a short list of potential actions that were then analyzed and brought back in workshops in September. So those listening sessions, people showed up with all kinds of ideas in terms of what we should consider. I believe we put together, out of those notes, we had about 20 to 30 pages of notes, and were able to decipher 150 to 200 or so specific actionable items. We took all of that work and thought through kind of feasibility and implementability of that work, narrowed that list down to about, I think there were several dozen actions that we came back and held a series of workshops in September. We had an in-person workshop in the Central Valley, as well as several virtual workshops in September to receive feedback on that work and those set of specific actions for consideration. And then from there, we took that feedback and further refined those set of actions and released last week on our website a detailed list of actions and descriptions for public comment. And so this is that detailed list is for folks who attended the workshops will look very familiar. There were several actions, and I'll walk through those here in a bit, that were dropped. There were actions that were changed based on feedback. There were descriptions that were detailed out based on feedback, but we did not introduce anything new that was not presented at the workshops. It was kind of iterative on what was presented at the workshop. That is now available for public comment, and our stakeholders have until December 13th to provide written public comment to us on that, and then also using this as a forum for comment as well. The goal is to take that public comment and in early 2025 release a final CAPTI that includes a set of actions we're committing to based on the feedback that we receive. So in terms of the scope of actions that are under consideration, we are considering actions around the awarding and programming of statewide discretionary grants, and what I like to think as everything that goes up to that point, right? So statewide planning and coordination efforts that impact those programs, project development and mitigation of projects that compete in those discretionary programs. So this is really around, you know, what I think people often refer to as the transportation project pipeline for our competitive grant program. And that's kind of the scope of CAPTI as we look at what types of actions we can consider. One thing I'd like to note about the scope of actions is that previous work streams that we committed to in 2021 that are not directly called out in our set of new actions are not necessarily just going away. We continue to iterate on that work and continue implementing that work. If it's not specifically called out, it basically just means that we're not committing to a whole new body of work in that space. But for example, our CSIS tool that we've presented, Caltrans has presented on here, will continue to be used and iterated on and worked on, even if it's not called out as a new action. The equity index, for example, that Caltrans also created will continue to be used and implemented. New actions that we plan to commit to are being introduced in our actions and descriptions list, and all of these actions are have a time frame of implementation by the end of the administration. So we really looked at that 2-year time frame as the bounds of what we can do and what we can commit to. These actions are being bucketed under 4 new CAPTI strategies based on our listening sessions and the conversations we've had with stakeholders in terms of where folks would like to focus. We have a set of actions around transforming the future of the state highway system. So this is really around, I know we often talk about, and the second strategy gets to this, we talk about the emissions from our projects and mitigating those emissions and reducing those emissions. But at the same time, you know, we need a positive and forward-looking vision for what we're going to do. It's not just about reducing negative impacts, but how do we build a world-class transportation system that meets the needs of Californians? So that's what those set of actions are on. If you could go back to the last slide, please. The next strategy is on reducing greenhouse gas impacts of transportation investments, so really getting at that pipeline of existing projects, how do we continue to lower emissions impacts from those projects. We have a set of actions around delivering equitable outcomes. So we had a lot of what I call really important process equity work in CAPTI last time, establishing an equity advisory committee meeting, creating tools. Now, you know, we hear from stakeholders that they, you know, want us to really think about, all right, that's all great. How does that really impact outcomes? What additional actions can you do to tie the processes in place to changes on the ground in our investments? And then we have a bucket of actions around improving transparency and accountability. And this is answering to a call from our stakeholders to, you know, really be able to articulate and show as much of the data as we can as to what goes into our projects and, you know, where we are, and to be able to kind of better inform all of us as we make these decisions moving forward. So this next slide has a lot on it. I struggled with how to articulate to you all the different actions in CAPTI, and I found it very challenging to basically not tell you about all of them under those four buckets. So this is essentially captures every single action in this new plan, but in a condensed manner. So I'll try to move through this pretty quickly. Some of the actions we're considering include a statewide express mobility action plan, which is essentially a plan for the role of roadway pricing in the state. This is distinct and different from the road user charge, which would be a user-based fee. This is really talking about what is the role of facilities-based pricing, you know, things like toll lanes and managed lanes, all facility tolling, cordon pricing, et cetera, in meeting our goals. I know that's an item that has been presented to here previously. Local and regional governments are working on various bodies of work in that space. We really want to make sure that the state is taking a leadership role, particularly in embedding equity and equity best practices and how folks roll out those types of projects. So that is the goal with that element. Additionally, we have an action on a comprehensive climate adaptation planning and delivery framework, and having Caltrans lay out a much more comprehensive planning framework for how to incorporate climate adaptation in our projects. As we work to reduce emissions, we know climate impacts are here. We're seeing a continued increase in the amount of expenditures to emergency projects due to extreme weather events, and so we want to take a much more comprehensive look at how we address those impacts in our projects. Next, a really exciting, I think very interagency item here is to establish what we call a central delivery team to deliver zero emission freight projects. So this item in particular comes out of the SB 671 report that was presented, I believe, in April to this body, and was a recommendation of that report that would bring together the agencies here, particularly CARB and CTC, Caltrans, CalSTA, as well as other relevant agencies like CEC and GOBIZ, CPUC, to work together to help deliver zero emission freight projects, given the cross coordination that's needed to do so across those agencies. We have an action to improve VMT mitigation through the establishment of banks and exchanges, and to also improve our VMT analysis for rural projects. So the VMT mitigation piece was mentioned earlier with Executive Order N224. We want to build on that. The VMT analysis for rural projects piece is really around acknowledging that VMT analysis that we have right now may not necessarily work for rural projects that don't have a high VMT impact. And so we want to reevaluate that essentially, we often talk about how one size does not fit all in terms of how this stuff is applied to the state, around the state. So how do we really right-size what that VMT analysis looks like for rural projects and use existing research or any available new research needed to bring that to fruition. Next, and I will dive into this a little bit further in a second, but we have a set of actions around SP1 program guidelines to further incentivize VMT mitigation and reduction and to improve environmental justice considerations in those programs as well. I will keep that brief because I have some slides that dive into that here in a second. We have numerous actions around increasing transparency and access through doing things like improving our technical assistance to tribal governments, improving public engagement for our largest source of maintenance and operations dollars through the SHOP, and creating a project database so our stakeholders and the public can easily access and search and see what projects are happening on the state highway system. We want to create a displacement policy to avoid housing takings in disadvantaged communities caused by projects on the state highway system. We're very excited about this potential action. We often talk about the impacts of transportation on communities, equity impacts being something of the past, things like housing takings, but those types of projects continue to still happen. So how do we make sure that we're being incredibly deliberate about when that happens and trying to avoid those takings as much as we can? We also, as we think about the future of CAPDAI as the administration enters its home stretch, are interested in codifying the CAPDAI guiding principles to ensure that this work continues past the current administration. And as we do all this work, I think it's important to continue evaluating our progress to make sure that we're continuing to move in the right direction. So we want to commit to another study, much like the MTI study we did earlier, to evaluate these investments. So I know that was a lot, so thank you for bearing with me. And then we have made some changes that I want to quickly acknowledge since the workshops, based on the feedback we got. So there, for folks who have been following this through this year, there are various actions and changes, actions that have been removed that were previously included. So I wanted to acknowledge that. We had a commitment for a transit policy action that has been removed because that action is now in law. We have SB 960, which requires a transit policy implementation. We're committed to working with Caltrans and moving expeditiously to implement SB 960, but did not see the need to kind of further reiterate it here as an implementation action given our existing commitment to that work. We incorporated feedback to further clarify on actions tied to the SB1 program guidelines based on feedback we got, and we'll do a little bit more of that here today to talk about how those actions would actually work and to provide some flexibility in the implementation of those actions based on feedback that we received. We strengthened our displacement action language based on feedback we received. We removed several actions on excess toll revenues, on a multimodal spending target on for CAPDAI, and on reevaluating benefit cost tools, because we got a lot of feedback from folks that brought up, I think, a lot of real concerns about us not being ready to really take on that work right now. And then there's numerous other places where feedback has been incorporated throughout the work and the descriptions that you see on the actions, but these are some of the major ones that I wanted to highlight. So I wanted to wrap up by, taking a lot of this theoretical work and making it a little bit more practical in terms of, how has our work changed our business practices and the results we're seeing on the ground, and what can we expect going forward if we were to implement the actions as proposed. So, for example, diving into some of those SP1 programs I just mentioned, for the Solutions for Congested Corridors program, due to CAPDAI, we saw that in cycle three, a large uptick in the amount of multimodal investments in the program. So 10 projects, all 10 projects, totaling over $500 million in cycle three, were multimodal, which is up from 4 of 7 in cycle two and 5 of 9 in cycle one. The East Bay Greenway multimodal project is highlighted here as a good example of the types of projects we're now seeing in Solutions for Congested Corridors based on some of that change. We also saw a major decrease in the amount of VMT emitted from this program. The program overall was barely VMT increasing when you look at the total suite of investments last round. So given that, we're proposing to move it closer to VMT neutrality by requiring that not every single project component, but that applications holistically think about a VMT-neutral collection of projects when they apply to the program to help move us in that direction. Next, on the Trade Corridor Enhancement Program, we saw a major increase in the amount of zero-emission vehicle infrastructure, heavy-duty infrastructure in the program. We actually also saw, surprisingly, we didn't necessarily expect this, but an increase in the amount of active transportation improvements bundled with freight improvements. And this was data that we found through our Mineta Transportation Institute study. And I think this was due to the increased focus on equity and environmental justice and on essentially, addressing community impacts of projects. So where freight had a community impact on a project, folks were really thinking about, if I'm doing a grade separation project, how do I ensure, for example, that there's active transportation connectivity. Moving forward, we know that the Trade Corridor Enhancement Program continues to be our largest source of greenhouse gas emissions and VMT emissions based on our study of all the competitive programs. And so, you know, that's where we wanted to put a finer focus to still center freight benefits and freight projects as the core goal of this program, but to try to mitigate specifically for passenger vehicle VMT of these projects where we can. Many of these projects per SB 743 are already required to do that. Can we, in situations where we have similarly competing projects, further incentivize and give a competitive advantage to projects that really take that notion seriously to mitigate their VMT? And also want to add a additional focus on environmental justice burdens and impacts in the program moving forward. And final example I wanted to give is on our work on reconnecting communities and reducing displacement. So the Highways to Boulevards Reconnecting Communities pilot program launched due to its inclusion in CAPTI. We're really excited about the $75 million we've invested in or are investing in three communities that we're working with hand in hand. We developed an anti-displacement memo to try to address displacement impacts in communities as well. We want to continue this work. And so the displacement avoidance policy that I mentioned earlier is really trying to build on the successes we're seeing on these equity considerations in our communities. Next slide, please. So thank you for bearing with me through that fairly dense and fast presentation. In terms of next steps and where we go from here, we, as mentioned, have a full set of draft actions and descriptions available on our public comment. We have about a 6-week window from its release to collection. In terms of where we go from here, the final CAPTI update will be released in early 2025. And we have our website listed there for folks to direct public comment to. But really excited to hear the dialogue here today. And thank you again for giving us the opportunity to present. And I will go ahead and pass it to Sohab to present on REAP and how that connects to this work.
I can go ahead and get started and with introductions while they're pulling up the presentation. Oh, look at that. There we go. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for having me here today. My name is Sohab Mahmood. I am from the California Department of Housing and Community Development, also known as HCD. I'm a senior policy manager, and I work on a variety of projects at HCD, including housing elements, and most notably what we're here to talk about today, which is the REAP 2.0 program. I'm happy to provide an update on this program and share some of the many successes that have come out of this program. Next slide, please. To give a quick overview of the program, REAP 2.0 is a $560 million grant program. Broadly, REAP 2.0 supports activities across the state that help create additional homes near key destinations for all Californians by supporting infill housing and affordability production goals, by promoting inclusive and equitable communities, and reducing driving. REAP 2.0 seeks to harmonize and meld multiple state planning objectives, including housing, climate change, land use, and transportation. To achieve that goal of harmonization, REAP 2.0 is administered by four state agencies, with HCD facilitating and leading this group, the Governor's Office of Planning and Research, OPR, although I heard there's a new name now, the Strategic Growth Council, SGC, and the California Air Resource Board, CARB. REAP 2.0 funds are being used to integrate and align multiple planning goals that accelerate infill housing, meet ARENA targets, reduce vehicle miles traveled, promote a variety of housing choices and affordability in high resource areas that are also near transit and job centers, promote infill and infrastructure investments near transit while revitalizing concentrated areas of poverty and facilitating the implementation of adopted regional and local plans, such as the region's Sustainable Community Strategies, or SCS plans. REAP 2.0 was a flexible planning and implementation grant program that strengthened partnership between the state, regions, and local entities while maintaining accountability to the program goals through reporting and other mechanisms. $560 million have been invested to support these goals through planning and implementation activities. Eligible applicants included metropolitan planning organizations known as MPOs, rural cities and counties that were not represented by an MPO, and tribal entities. $480 million was allocated to MPOs. $30 million was invested to higher impact transformative projects that made a strong focus on investments in historically underserved areas. And an additional $30 million was invested in rural and tribal communities. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. One of the primary purposes of this program was to harmonize and integrate our housing and climate goals while accounting for unique circumstances throughout the state, such as differences between urban, rural, and tribal governments. To address this, the program made investments in a variety of transformative projects throughout the state to help us achieve these goals. REAP 2.0 program objectives require that each proposed use of funds and each applicant must demonstrate a nexus to all three program goals, including infill development, reducing vehicle miles travel, and affirmatively furthering fair housing, known as AB 686, while having a transformative nature and providing significant beneficial impact to the region. All REAP 2.0 applications were required to satisfy these goals and objectives while demonstrating the nexus between housing and climate change in ways that also advance equity and improve underlying social vulnerabilities. Through this program, we were able to achieve geographic equity by utilizing various set-asides for different entities. Specifically, $30 million was funded to tribal entities and rural counties throughout the state. While the program did have 35 awardees, here are some amazing and transformative projects that we would like to highlight today. The first one is the Sacramento Area Council of Governments, SACOG, also known as, also funded the Green Mean Goes program, which funds corridor-wide capital infrastructure investments for non-transportation projects in green zones throughout the SACOG region. The goal of these investments is to improve outdated infrastructure, remove barriers to infill development, and support higher housing densities near transit, resources, and services. This program also aims to reduce VMT per capita and utilize the Land Use Diversity Index. Another successful project was the Tulare County Association of Governments, also known as TCAG, in the San Joaquin Valley, which was awarded to fund four projects that will implement the first phase of the Cross Valley Corridor Plan, which is the foundation of their recently adopted regional transportation plan and their sustainable community strategy. These projects included high-density housing for very special needs populations, sidewalks, transit stops, and a multimodal transit center in Farmersville, along with a transit voucher program. Another project included the City of Oakland, which will be awarded $10 million to invest in West Oakland. $8 million will support the Bay Area's largest infill affordable housing project near the Mandela Station. Specifically, the $8 million will go towards supporting over 2,000 housing units, with 418 of those units being affordable near transit. Additional funds will be used for complete streets improvements near BART stations. And finally, under the tribal and rural allocation of this program, the Big Valley Band of Pomo Indians was awarded $5 million to undertake a rancheria-wide master planning process for an infill housing development site. The tribe will be using funds for transportation improvements, including bus stops and pedestrian paths. Next slide, please. I'd like to reiterate how impactful and transformative this program was and will be in the future for the entire state. Working on this program has led to many successes and lessons learned for the future on how to harmonize housing and climate goals. To highlight some of the early successes of the REAP 2.0 program, and in addition to the examples we noted, within the tribal and rural set aside of $30 million, nearly two-thirds of the awarded applicants were tribes. This program also provided an opportunity for both federally and non-federally recognized tribes to apply and receive state funding. Some of these tribes were able to secure REAP funds as the first ever award program from a state agency. The MPO funds demonstrated and encouraged strong partnerships with local governments and tribes in their region. And REAP has provided several examples of innovative projects across the state that can be served as examples and case studies for future projects. While implementing the REAP 2.0 program, we also learned many other things. One, including the importance of and the need for technical assistance to tribal and rural applicants to access state funding. Second, collaboration among partner agencies was crucial for the scoring and the deliberation process of the awardees. With that process being structured around equity, consistency, and the goal to achieve the best outcomes. And lastly, the program design should include flexibility to allow for more successful applicants to access state funds and promote statewide equity. Next slide. That should be. With that, I will hand it off back to the panel. And thank you, and feel free to ask any questions.
So that was excellent. Darwin, great job. Carrie, thank you. And for bringing it all together as well. I will, at this point, ask if there are comments or questions on the dais by HCD, by CARB commissioners, by CTC commissioners, and then we'll open it up for people first in the room. Thank you for traveling to be with us, or participating remotely. Thank you for participating however you can. But let's start on the dais. If people can indicate to me, I see a light on by CTC Commissioner Eager, and then by CARB Commissioner Guerra, and we'll just go in the order that lights go on. Leah?
Yes, thank you. And thank all of you. That was great, and certainly tying things together is so important. My questions are for you, Darwin, on CAFDI. First of all, I want to thank you all for holding the listening session in Fresno. I think it's probably a broken record of me saying, you know, there's about 6 million people that can't drive to San Francisco and L.A., so that's great that you had it there. After that meeting, I certainly got a lot of phone calls from folks after they attended. A couple of questions that I couldn't answer, and maybe you can hear. One is a VMT-neutral project. What does that look like? Is there one that we can look at and say, oh, here's the perfect one that we need to emulate as we move forward? Maybe you can answer that one first, and then I have a follow-up after that.
Sure. Thank you so much, Commissioner. And yeah, it was thanks so much for the suggestion of going down to Fresno to have that meeting. We did, in our earlier listening sessions, planned to go down there originally, but I believe due to other conferences and whatnot, most people there preferred to do virtual. So glad we got to go down in September, at least, to have that conversation. It was a really fruitful one. In terms of VMT neutrality, so what's important here is the nuance of the language we're using in the action is around VMT neutral applications. And an application can go beyond just one specific project component. So what we're looking at is essentially applicants bringing together a suite of projects that point to a VMT neutral set. So there's various ways that they can show that. One of those is through the comprehensive multimodal corridor plans that projects and solutions for congested corridors are required to be involved in. So if they have a VMT neutral CMCP, as we call it, then that project would qualify, or if they bring together a project, for example, that is fully mitigating its VMT, it would be VMT neutral, so 3SV743, or a project that just reduces VMT to begin with, as we saw most of the Solutions for Congested Corridors projects do. So that language is essentially meant to incentivize and move highway capacity projects that might have VMT impacts forward to think about mitigation, or to pairing their project with other components that would offset that VMT as part of their application. So that's kind of the goal there. And programmatically, we were actually very close to that line in terms of our investments. I will say just more generally that the descriptions for these actions are still fairly general on purpose to create the flexibility for CTC through its program guidelines process to hear from stakeholders to think about what is the exact way and mechanism to implement this in a way that's flexible and works for the entire state of California.
So there's not a specific calculation that somebody can put in and say, oh, okay, if I do this is what that means. Now I'm VMT neutral.
We have not, again, going back to that flexibility, we have not signaled anything of that nature and are trying to leave that flexible for CTC staff to determine, what is the appropriate way to determine that? Is it more of a list of different mechanisms? Is it qualitative? Is it purely quantitative? Can you point to an EIR with mitigation or to a corridor plan that states something? Are there other mechanisms? So we want to be flexible in terms of what that looks like.
So I have a request then. I know we would certainly appreciate it if you could come back, or your staff or whoever, and give this presentation at our next CTC meeting so that more people can participate. It's going to be, here in Riverside again. But give that opportunity after they've had a chance to have this sink in and look at their current plans and say, oh man, I'm just now finishing, trying to apply CAPTI 1 to what it is we're doing. I'm going to have to redo this and do CAPTI 2. So they're thinking those things through. So it would be nice maybe if you could come back and do this, and then, we can open it up to more people that will be there for that meeting. That's a suggestion.
Happy to take that back to my management and discuss. Just in terms of this action in particular, we did first workshop this in our September workshop and had a public comment that informed the flexibility of that action. During kind of this public comment that runs, I think, right around that December CTC meeting, also certainly happy to have specific conversations with folks, stakeholders who might want to work through and think about and have us really understand, particular projects that might run into issues here. We've already had some of those conversations, but happy to continue having that, and I'll take that particular suggestion back to my management.
And I know they really appreciate you looking at the analysis for VMT in rural areas and how what we've done in the past, we need to rethink those on how we do that analysis based on urban and rural. So thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Eager, thank you. We're going to go to Commissioner Guerra and then Commissioner Dr. Shaheen.
Great. Thank you very much, Chair Gardino. First, just wanted to thank the staff for their collective work. What I hope to try to get out of these meetings or these convenings is some tangible work. And obviously the cross collaboration is a byproduct of that. But I'd actually like to see if a pathway for this body to send a joint letter to the legislature on the REAP 2.0 issue. It's a one-time allocation that's been moving forward every year. I'm very proud of the work that I've seen through this program that hits all three points: the quality of our air, the need to improve our infrastructure, and addressing the significant shortage of housing, particularly in working class communities that have seen lack of investment. And I will, recognize what I've seen in our MPO, the Sacramento Area Council of Governments, work through the Green Needs Grow program. That small amount of money has unlocked the opportunity for more housing in areas that are not your central city, that are close to stadiums or theaters or whatnot, but or people are looking for revitalization. And what's so powerful about it is it recognizes that most of the time you don't see investments in these communities because of the old infrastructure, the old public works. And we require anybody who's going to build housing to take care of all of the infrastructure, the sewer, water, electrical, an intersection, or even redoing driveways for one project that may be 50 to 100 units. So it's always this, who's going to take the first bite? And nobody wants to jump in on that. But this little bit of money, this focused amount of money, allows us, and we've seen it, unlocks a lot of vacant parcels, a lot of vacant buildings and commercial corridors, that as our cities and counties continue to age, that infrastructure is aging and only becoming a higher cost burden. So not only is it public works jobs that go in to fill in the public works, the need of the public infrastructure, but it provides a benefit to ratepayers when we look at how we're going to pay for our work over there. So I'd like to see something tangible coming out, and I think at least either one, if through our respective requirements to report to the legislature or through this body, we can have a direct statement coming out about the successes of this program, because it is a one-time program, and how, you know, we can hit multiple targets and maximize the benefit. So those are my you asked for questions. I had no questions because it was a great presentation, but more comments. And I think what can we actually perceive to push further on that? I did only have one concern on the CAPTI, and that's the codifying of the guidelines. Challenges of that are particularly this. I think we have 30 new legislators that are coming in. I worry about if we, you know, when you put it in statute, it may take years to back and course correct if we need. So I think with the three agency work here, we have an ability to do that. So those are just my comments. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, and perhaps we can direct our staff leadership of our three organizations to explore that. Great. Thank you. We're going to go to Dr. Shaheen, and then Commissioner Baums, and then Commissioner Cruz. Also in the queue is Commissioner Elliott, participating remotely, and Commissioner De La Torre and Commissioner Hurt. Did I see yours as well? Okay. No. Okay, but I'll put Commissioner Hurt in the queue. Dr. Shaheen.
Thanks so much, Chair Gardino. So first I wanted to just acknowledge the hard work of all of our speakers. So thank you, Carrie, Darwin, and Sohab. I have a couple of points, but Carrie, I'd like to start with you just in terms of some observations that I've shared with you in terms of trends that we're seeing in BMT as we come out of the pandemic. So my question is around, with our upcoming 2026 SB 150 report, what we're thinking about, what we're seeing in terms of work from home, which, you know, has been an ongoing strategy that we've tried to stand up, and then with the pandemic created this unexpected opportunity for that to really become a mechanism that could really reduce VMT. But as you noted in slide 9, that trend seems to be reversing a bit. And I was wondering, you know, what we could potentially do to ensure that we don't lose more ground on work from home as a potential strategy, and what your thoughts are on what we can do in that space, working with other agencies and local governments.
Well, thank you for that question. I think as you point out, and as noted in the slide, the working from home really did make a key difference in that the drive alone commuting and was part of presumably the VMT reduction that we saw there. In terms of what we can do specifically, I think that's a great question. Of course, every region in creating its sustainable community strategy, many regions have looked at different approaches to this. Sometimes it's shows up as a, you know, an exogenous variable, but some regions are actually looking at specific strategies that they could undertake. And as part of updating the SB 150 report, we look at
Among the different things that the legislation directs us to look at, it does direct us to look at best practices. So we could focus in on that in as we think about best practices as an area to try to seek some out. I guess the only other thing I would say, this is definitely an area of interest for CARB. We are doing some research into the dynamics around working from home, including is there a rebound effect in terms of people who are, they didn't go to the office that day, but they still need to stop by the drugstore. So now that's a separate trip. So as part of that research, I think we'll understand the dynamics a lot better as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to hear more about that. I recall in a briefing, you discussing that, say, COG may be really examining work from home as a strategy to quantify and include. So I'd be very interested in hearing more about that, along with the rebound effects, also the implications of this for public transit use. Right. So I would like to turn my attention to Darwin. I really took away a major theme from your presentation is a focus on implementation and action. And I think that is really needed in the state, particularly on this issue. You know, I think we've got a lot of opportunity in other mechanisms than work from home. We have pricing strategies, which you well mentioned. So I was delighted to hear about a focus on managed lanes. Cordon pricing, a little sensitive here in the U.S. at this point, right? But I think the idea of really focusing on funding of projects is a really great one. And I'd just like to hear more about the scoring regime. I know we spent a fair amount of time on that. I peppered Marlin with several questions. I think this idea of scoring our projects for funding, but also having data transparency is exceptionally important. And I know some of that maybe falls into our sister agencies to take a role on that, but I would really love to hear more about transparency and how we prioritize funding, because how do we prioritize and how do we operationalize it in a way that's transparent?
Thank you so much for that, Dr. Shane. And in terms of how funding is prioritized and the mechanisms used and the transparency for that. It's all the details of it are a pretty long and complicated conversation, but you know, some of the tools that you may be aware of, we have the CSIS, the Caltrans System Investment Strategy, that prioritizes how Caltrans is making nominations for SB1 programs. There's already separate from CAPDI, I think an incredibly thoughtful and transparent approach by CTC on how SB1 program decisions are made, which is influenced by some of the CAPDI actions, such as the ones where we're incentivizing for the reduction of VMT that will go into that process. And then, you know, some of the actions we have here are also about additional transparency on what those projects are that can even compete through creating like a database, for example. So I know that's a fairly kind of general response, but you know, we are looking at kind of all the different angles, qualitative and quantitative tools in terms of how we can bring and shed more light into what's out there to compete, how it's competing, why it's competing in that way, as kind of like at all steps of the process. So.
Wonderful. I would just love to maybe hear more from CTC staff in the future about guidelines and from Caltrans on weighting criteria and prioritization, as well as that database. And final question, I know, Darwin, you know this is an area that's near and dear to my heart, but I was really delighted to see the recommendation for VMT mitigation and having a bank in an exchange. And I also noted that you said that you really wanted to focus on action and implementation by 2026. So how far do you think we can get in terms of implementation or thinking about how to stand up a mitigation bank in exchange?
That is a very, very good question. I think so the action we have written is building off of our action we had last time, which was to explore the idea, and now we're committing to working towards implementation. in terms of how far we can get, I want to be, you know, really cautious in terms of overpromising on that. The executive order on N224, the governor's executive order on infill, puts the new Office of Land Use and Climate Innovation, formerly OPR, in charge of creating a task force to really lead on this. We're reiterating kind of that commitment here in CAPDAI, and adding some elements in our language here to talk about also the role of regional, supporting regional banks if regions were to pursue that. So I think there's various pieces of implementation happening right now in terms of at a regional level. And so we want to support and lift that up. And Caltrans is already doing some of that. I know agencies like LA Metro, for example, are exploring kind of regional and local concepts. We have other folks around the state that are interested in doing the same. And then in terms of a statewide implementation piece, whether that's a bank or an exchange or something different, we want to be able to fill in the gaps to allow this mechanism to be used by folks beyond the regions that have the capacity to do something on their own, which is why we're really thinking about that statewide approach. The timeline on what that looks like, I think, is a little bit up in the air just based on this being so early in its infancy. And then those regional approaches, I think, starting to be a little bit of the test bed to really understand what this looks like. So I think in 2 years, it would not be surprising to me to have examples to point to as you know, exchanges or banks start to formulate. But, you know, beyond that, I think our biggest commitment here is just to continue lifting up those work streams as they come online, engaging in the task force that's going to be created, and seeing how far we can get.
Right. We'll keep up the great work. Really delighted to see so much innovation interjected into the second round on CAPDAI. Thank you.
Dr. Bonds.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. And I want to add my thanks to the presenters. Those were really very informative and clearly articulated presentations. So I guess my first question/comment is to Carrie. You know, I'm the longest serving board member. I've been on since 2008, and we've been talking about VMT reduction the whole time that I've been board member. And it's really distressing to me to see that, you know, on slide 7, that we're practically back to pre-pandemic levels of VMT. And I just want to stress for the public, because I think staff knows this, that, you know, to meet our climate change goals in articulated in the scoping plan, we need to reduce VMT as well as move towards greater zero emission vehicles. There's a lot of people think because we're, you know, electrifying our passenger fleet, and I'm very proud of what we've done, got to do more, but we've made good progress, that, you know, eliminates the concern for VMT reduction, but it doesn't. And there's an equity issue right off, which is that, you know, colleagues at Berkeley, both in Dr. Shaheen's department and my School of Public Health, it's a collaborative effort, have shown that it's actually passenger cars that are every bit as important as the heavy-duty vehicles that we've been focused on in terms of the disproportionate burden of exposures to harmful pollutants, and that also means greenhouse gas emissions. So I guess my question to Carrie is, you showed how bad the situation is. What can we do together to, you know, start really seeing some VMT reductions? Yeah, I just need some bullet points here. Make me feel better.
Let me give you a quick action plan. No, thank you for the question and for making that point. I think it is really true that, you know, it's a stubborn metric. It is not moving, and I share your concern about that, so I appreciate it. I think one of the key themes that we highlight in multiple documents is the need to really what we're all here today to talk about, to better align transportation, housing, and climate programs and policies. And I think that's why these joint meetings are so valuable. CAPDI and REAP, of course, are both examples of initiatives the state is implementing to align state goals in a way that would support implementation of SCSs and help achieve these VMT reductions. The governor's executive order on infill housing, as we've been discussing today, also calls on state agencies to take actions to support infill housing. But of course, more must be done, as you point out. And in both the 2022 SB 150 report and scoping plan, CARB has identified a number of important strategies that state, regional, and local governments could partner on. Some of the big ticket strategies that we identify include equitable road pricing, fostering development, particularly affordable housing in infill areas to reduce the need to drive, and prioritizing funding on housing and transportation projects that also reduce the need to drive. And since there's never enough money to fund all projects, it's important that we think about how the state can spend its limited resources on the best projects. So those are a few thoughts, but I think it's going to be a conversation that will continue. So
thank you.
I have one more question, if I might, for Darwin. I really agree with Dr. Shaheen. It's nice to see some innovative thinking that hopefully will lead to some VMT reductions. But there's one, program in particular, the Solutions for Congested Corridors, SCCP. It sounds like there's going to be a new emphasis on VMT reductions, or at least neutrality for projects. But it's for the total of projects funded under SCCP. And I guess I'm concerned that, one or two really big projects that make a difference in that regard will, kind of outweigh individual projects that might really have impacts on communities, for example. It seems to me that it might be better to do it project by project as opposed to the total amount of projects. Could you comment about that?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. for that question. Just a couple of clarifications about that program. So right now, due to the last round of CAPDI, that SCCP program actually does have a focus on VMT reduction. There's criteria in there that makes projects that reduce VMT more competitive than ones that don't. What we're proposing here is to take that a step further and say, right now, you're more competitive if you reduce, but you can still increase and be competitive based on what the pool of projects look like. So can we, for that kind of upper end of what those projects look like in terms of VMT increases, really try to move those projects towards VMT neutrality? And we're doing that not at a programmatic level, but what we're suggesting is at the application level, which I view kind of in between a specific project level and a program level. So an application can be a partnership between various projects, but the VMT neutrality requirement that we're proposing would be for every single application that is submitted. So I hope that helps clarify.
That does. Thank you, Darwin.
Okay, Mr. Cruz.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the presentation. A lot of really good information as it relates to the GHG reduction VMT. I also want to speak to the REAP 2.0 as my colleague spoke to the benefits in Sacramento specifically. The best way, in my opinion, to really reduce VMT is to build infill housing and attract people back into communities that are older just by nature, to make investments to infrastructure, sewer, water, to attract private investment. And this is a really good program. And I, commend you for your work, and hopefully we can build on some successes that we've seen thus far. VMT, obviously, as a commissioner, one of our challenges now is we have seen cost escalation in larger projects, not just because of the VMT reduction goals, but all the way around, be it material costs, just design costs, changes, just midstream in projects. But has there really been a deep dive as far as a cost analysis of what it costs for some of these bigger projects to reduce their VMT, and how it would affect those projects' funding in the cycles? And then as it relates to freight and safety projects, how does some shifts in some of the programs affect those projects specifically? And how can we incorporate those VMT reduction goals without sacrificing the competitiveness of those projects in those areas as it relates to freight and safety?
Thank you, Commissioner, for those questions. In terms of kind of cost impacts, VMT mitigation for a project that might need it certainly can be costly. In terms of, a detailed analysis of, I'm not aware of a full comprehensive analysis. I know there was a bill that was just passed. The number is escaping my head. I think it's SB 768. Thank you. That would require HCD to lead a analysis that will include that mitigation. So that's something to keep an eye out for. But we're certainly on a project by project level very involved in, and Caltrans is very involved in on the transportation side, thinking about cost effective mitigation for these projects. Oftentimes, the mitigation ends up being transportation investments or other investments that a community or even a particular agency is also looking to accomplish. Although it may feel like a direct burden to that particular project, it is collectively bringing forward or moving forward another project that same agency may have wanted to fund anyway. So there's some co-benefits there, but it's something that we're also interested in and looking into, and hopefully that report will shed further light on that as well. In terms of kind of VMT metrics and impacts on freight and safety projects, I think particularly taking the example of the Trade Corridor Enhancement Program, I think one really important thing to note about how we envision that criteria to play out is that there are existing criteria and considerations in that program around air quality considerations and whatnot, and we would like the VMT mitigation component to build off of that. That the way that program is structured, that criteria does not supersede or in any way outweigh the core goals and requirements of the program for the project to meet and show freight benefits. And so what we're really talking about is in a situation where you have within a region projects that would otherwise be fairly equally competitive, if one is showing a strong effort to reduce its VMT, can that project get a competitive edge over one that is not, but has similar benefits? So in terms of the specifics and details of those, of the mechanisms around that, I don't want to step on the toes of CTC staff and the guidelines process and that process to really think about how to put this into the guidelines. But that's at least how we've been thinking about it and envisioning this really working in this program. So hopefully that helps.
Thank you, Doran. I appreciate your depth of knowledge on these issues. It's really helpful. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Elliott.
Hi. Good morning. I hope you can hear me there in the room. I'm sorry I can't be there with you in person. And thank you, Chair Randolph, for acknowledging me. My question is, and since I put myself in queue, this has been discussed a little bit, so I'll narrow my question. I think mostly actually to CARB staff, and I'm looking at the governor's executive order that's been addressed in the last couple of commissioner questions, specifically item number 4B, which tasks CARB with BCSH, so I guess there's representation in the room there as well, to start to contemplate metrics to assess the climate and environment benefits of infill housing. And I think this has been echoed by the previous two commissioners who have asked questions before me. It's really good and really important to think about mitigations to VMT and how we can achieve cost-effective mitigation and what VMT neutrality looks like once it's properly mitigated. I guess I'm sort of asking this question from the other direction, which is, if infill housing has a climate net climate benefit, as established by the work that CARB may do, that is in itself some sort of mitigation in a way, and it actually requires less mitigation because you could quantify the environmental benefit of that housing. So I'm wondering, I know this executive order was just issued, so there won't be any work product against this, but I'm wondering if CARB and HCD or BCSH could speak a little bit to what the work stream is ahead of us to address that part of the executive order. That's my question. Thank you very much.
And can I ask Chanel Fletcher, if you're on, maybe you can address that question.
Sure, I can definitely start. And for those who are in the room that I haven't met, my name is Chanel Fletcher. I'm the Deputy Executive Officer of Equity, Communities, and Environmental Justice at the California Air Resources Board. I am so sorry that I can't be there in person, but glad to be here virtually. So I will say that there are several kind of parts to this executive order. I appreciate you kind of acknowledging that. Specifically for CARB's part, I do want to acknowledge right now it's kind of a work in progress. So we're doing a few things on this front, really thinking about the question that you've asked. We're surveying existing literature for some of those key metrics. We're developing a contract to really assist us in this effort. And we're also partnering closely with key agencies to help us inform the work that we're doing. So we're really building on some of our ongoing conversations with HCD about the trends and the data. I do know that Carrie Connect has been one of our leads on this, and she is in the room. So I'm happy to have Carrie share a little bit more if that didn't answer the question that you were asking. But that's kind of a general overview, right? That right now it's a little bit of a work in progress right now.
Thanks, Ms. Fletcher. Yeah, if anyone else has anything to add, I'd appreciate any further updates.
I can add something here because not also Commissioner Elliott, but Commissioner Cruz also spoke about housing costs. So SB 768, which Darwin mentioned, we are very excited at HCD to take on that analysis. As you know, there are a number of great bills that the governor signed into law recently, and we are actually in the process of securing the funding needed to conduct that analysis. But let me say this. This is a study that will look into VMT mitigation and the relationship with how housing development cost is increasing. And that is why HCD, I believe, was charged with leading this study. I believe that SB 743 was meant to disincentivize sprawl, but not necessarily rural housing. So we need to distinguish rural housing need from sprawl, and to the extent that we can see the connection between VMT mitigation and housing development cost increasing, we can also distinguish the difference between rural housing that is being built in infill and things that we need to do to promote that versus sprawl. And so that is why HCD is looking forward to conduct this study once the budget is secured to get started. And we will do this as fast as we can, because this is a very important topic that we are interested in seeing the relationship between cost and VMT mitigation.
And if I could further add to tangential to Commissioner Elliott's point, another point of that executive order asks Caltrans to really look at housing as a mitigation strategy for transportation projects. And Caltrans just released, I believe a week ago, its updated SB 743 guidance for public comment, which is open right now. And in that outlines kind of initial and early steps for how the department can really think about within the existing kind of legal bounds and frameworks of where it might be possible to think about housing as a mitigation strategy for transportation projects. So also wanted to add that linkage.
Okay. Thanks, Darwin. That's an important point. It's an important point. I think, you know, we talk a lot about VMT mitigation. So you have to mitigate a bad thing by doing other things. I think really trying to steer this particular sub question to not think about VMT as something that need to be mitigated, but VMT is something that should not actually be created at all by establishing infill housing, which then obviously from my perspective as a transportation commissioner, then demands a lot less of certain kinds of investment and a lot more of other kinds of investment, a lot less of bigger, broader highways and a lot more of active transportation and public transit. But one has to follow the other, meaning if we want people to use more transit and more active transportation, we all collectively need to work to create housing opportunities for them more adjacent to those active transportation and public transit projects. So really thinking about housing as a positive, not something that just needs to be mitigated because you mitigate bad things. But in this case, can infill housing be really seen as a good thing for our climate and transportation funding objective? So I appreciate the answers that all three of the agencies gave. And I hope as we continue with these joint meetings, I'm going to continue to return to this question. So I hope to be able to receive updates on this moving forward. Thank you, Chair Randolph.
Thank you. And I think
Ms. Maybe it was Chair Randolph. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, Ms. Taylor wanted to add to the discussion a little bit. So I want to make sure that to give her a chance.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. I just wanted to provide some clarifications because I think for many of our stakeholders out there who participate in our competitive SB1 process and our programs, they may be a little confused about the conversation we're having about our application process. And so while we are working with CalSTA, and we agree with the words that Darwin has said in terms of the corridors and how we fund corridors that get to VMT neutral, how we implement that within our programs may not completely align with the words that have been said today. And so we will continue to work with the words to make sure that we are implementing the strategy that has been described. The challenge that our stakeholders may be hearing today is that when we look at our competitive SB1 programs, we look at projects that are contained within corridors. And so we want to make sure that we capture that corridor because our programs and our applications won't actually have the entire corridor within the application, but we will be funding those important pieces and those VMT reducing pieces of those corridor plans and the strategies that are there to keep moving us further and further to VMT neutral. And I think it's important because as we go through CAPTA and as we have these conversations, our stakeholders will come back to the commission to ask those clarifying questions to better understand what we're trying to articulate.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Ms. Hurt, where are you on the dais? There you are.
Thank you, Chair. So a couple of thoughts on this, and once again, thank you all for your presentation. On the key action highlights of CAPTI, it speaks of creating a statewide express mobility action plan that defines the role of roadway pricing and embeds equity. And of course, at least in the Bay Area where I am, a lot of folks are talking about all roadway pricing, all of the lanes being tolled, so to speak. And I want to get a little more insight on how you're thinking to date of equity and who are the key stakeholders you'll bring to the table to help with that discussion. I still stand strong, and I think I've heard some other folks speak to it a little bit, but the need for incredible investment, unprecedented actually, in public transit for the long term so that there are really true alternatives. And we hear so much about the fiscal cliff of public transit, and are we really pivoting and putting our dollars in the right places for the long-term need that is present when we talk about roadway pricing as the future? I'm also thinking a little bit about, you showed the project of the Greenway multimodal project, and it would be great if you gave us perspective on scaling and equity scaling. I mean, it's great that we've got that project, but really, what is this financial investment that we're all going to have to buy into to continue the appropriate growth so we can meet our collective vision of reduction of VMTs? And I'm also, I'd like to put forward that I see attention with all of the priorities, all of the plans, and then the need for private investment. And I'm sure each of the different agencies and stakeholders have different priorities. And us thinking really hard and deeply about how we're going to manage all of that. So at the end of the day, we can scale up. We can continue doing the work that's necessary, and people can feel like they're part of the solution versus we're not getting there fast enough together. So I know that that was a few things, but I'd love to hear more about what you're thinking in those areas.
Thank you so much, board member, for those questions. I mean, to get directly to your point around some tensions, I think there's a strong perception, and you know, frankly, I can see why around, you know, pricing of the system and implementing pricing strategies, like whether they're managed lanes or full facility tolling, having inequitable outcomes inherently. And so the guidelines and the guidance and the plan that we want to put together is really meant to outline the best practices as to, particularly to your point about which communities we're talking about here, you know, low-income communities of color, folks who are disproportionately impacted by not having transportation access. How do we think about pricing actually being a tool to benefit them? And I think there's various, without getting into all of it here, I think there's various ways where pricing can do that. We know that, for example, pricing can increase our availability of revenue sources, and that revenue can be invested back into things like transit to provide increased transit. There's been various studies around means-based tolling and thinking about, you know, how do you price facilities in a way that actually creates a less regressive system for how we pay for transportation. There are, you know, I think, numerous ways you could really think about pricing being a positive equity tool. So I think as locals and regions think about implementation, you know, we see the role of the state as starting to outline those best practices to help guide what implementation looks like to really center the equity outcomes in the use of that tool. So hopefully that helps answer that question for you. And I guess you also mentioned and brought up scaling, you know, I think, and the need for kind of doing this work at scale and having investments at scale. You know, that is certainly a challenge. I think that a common thread in transportation always ends up being that, at least recently, it feels like we're getting a large influx of funding, and yet we always do not have enough funding. And so, you know, I think those challenges will continue. That's why we're really prioritizing and thinking about, you know, how do you prioritize limited resources to its highest and best uses based on our goals? And that's really what CAPTA is about.
If I could follow up quickly, Chair, you spoke about revenues coming from the roadway pricing, and I think a little bit about those are the communities that are putting those revenues in, and then they're going back to them, more like a pass-through than really uplifting the equity concerns. But if that's how we're looking at it, I hope we can create community benefit funds so that they can decide in their communities how to use those funds. I'll also say that communities are not monolithic, and so we really need to pay attention about, I mean, we've given kind of broad terms of the groups we should be really concerned about equity-wise, but I think we need to take a closer look at the variety and making sure that they're sitting at the table and talking to us about that. And then I'll lastly say I want to echo Dr. Shaheen's focus on implementation. And this idea of highway expansion is really something that we need to get on top of sooner than later, and what that means for our communities with an environmental justice lens and monies that could be better used in different areas. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Tiffany.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. I'm going to echo some of the comments that were made by previously by some of my other commissioners, especially by Commissioner Eager. As some of you may know, I'm from a rural county, San Benito, and as well as the Central Coast, where the geographic spread is much further. and that some of the transportation alternatives and monies available to that are available to our areas, to the rural and Central Coast area, are largely unavailable or impractical. And so I'm particularly familiar with the stakeholders that talk about the idea that one size does not fit all in our state, and certainly happy to hear Darwin, you talk about that, and specifically have as one of the key action items under CAPDI, looking at improving the VMT analysis and mitigation guidance specifically for rural areas and rural projects. But to kind of double down on the question that Commissioner Eager brought up, I think the devil's in the details, and I'd certainly like to hear if you have reached out or your department has reached out to some of the rural areas to see what are the kind of realistic strategies, ones that are feasible in rural areas, whether it be because they don't have the same transportation alternatives that the urban areas have, or they don't have the monies that urban areas have. What are realistic strategies which will help those rural areas get to a neutral VMT position? And so I think that that's really critical, that we really, from my point of view, and I think many of us, and it's not just rural counties, there's so many rural areas within the entire state. I think that's really critical that be really looked at. So I'd like to hear a little bit further comment in that regard.
Thank you, Commissioner, for giving me an opportunity to discuss and address that. So in terms of a couple things, in terms of the implementation of that particular action, Caltrans will be taking the lead on that implementation. I know they've been having a lot of conversations already with the Rural Counties Task Force and with other stakeholders in terms of the needs for improved tools for VMT reduction, and then also really thinking about what VMT reduction more generally looks like in those areas. In terms of our engagement at CalSTA, we actually this coming week, or maybe next week, I'm losing track of my days here, but sometime in November, we have an upcoming meeting with the Rural Counties Task Force to look at the study that I know they commissioned to reevaluate VMT analysis, and so we'll be talking to them about their findings there. In the action, you'll note that we specifically call out rural stakeholders as folks we want to work in partnership with to implement this action. We'll also, in addition to that meeting, be having an additional meeting to more generally talk about the CAPDI actions to figure out where we can strengthen kind of rural connections. So we're incredibly committed to continuing to work with our rural partners. I've said this in other places as well. The overall amount of VMT from rural parts of the state is incredibly low. I don't want to misquote the number. I think it's under 3%. When we talk about VMT reduction, that is not where we're going to get the biggest bang for our buck from a climate perspective. However, I think the sustainable transportation solutions we talk about here more generally really help improve access everywhere, whether it's in a rural setting or not. So how do we make sure that we're bringing those positive benefits of transportation access and sustainable transportation access to rural environments, but in a way that doesn't burden them with requirements that are better targeted for other regions. So, we're taking that to heart, and we'll continue working with our partners on that.
Well, thank you. Yes, I know the Rural Task Force has done that analysis, looking at VMT as well as looking at the idea of induced demand and how it may be different in a rural area. So I'm glad to hear that. I mean, the bottom line is from my point of view, we don't want to get to the point where rural projects simply are not competitive because they don't have, either the financial resources to mitigate VMT, or they just don't have practical transportation, alternative transportation solutions. And so we have to, you know, continuously keep that in mind. I think many people in this room are from urban areas and don't fully appreciate that. So I'm going to continue to beat that drum. Last comment is I'm glad to hear the conversation that Commissioner Elliott brought up and Director Velasquez commented on, and the interaction between housing and VMT and traffic, and in certain rural areas like the county that I'm from, those are so important. Housing is driving, you know, we're trying to house the people from Silicon Valley, but it's driving VMT. So we need to find the right balance. And I think that is so critical that we recognize that. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Board Member Tagmorian.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. Thank you all for all of your presentations and to all the commissioners and board members who have commented so far. I think this is a rich discussion. And I just wanted to focus specifically on VMT reduction because we haven't talked about that enough. Well, clearly we haven't, per Dr. Baum's comment. So we obviously, Carrie, with your presentation, it demonstrated how long and significant a distance we have to go in order to reach both our statewide and regional goals. And we all know that the emissions that are caused by both the current VMT and the increasing VMT disproportionately impact low-income communities of color. And that's why we put ambitious VMT reductions in the scoping plan. So to follow up on some previous comments, I would like to ask you, Carrie, and others, more specifically, how the state can better support transit improvements to reduce VMT. And I just want to say that I think that clearly this is an equity move, that we absolutely need to improve transit in order to increase equity, given that low-income communities are the largest users, in at least in many communities, of transit. And it does seem that there are two recent indicators that say that folks are supportive of transit. There are some 40-plus ballot measures across the country for transit improvements, and most of them actually passed. The one in San Diego is too close to call at this point. We're hopeful, but people are willing to, voters are willing to pay for it, and they're indicating that at the ballot box. And the second indicator is just recently we had a free ride day for transit in San Diego, and it was a 15% increase of ridership over the previous week. So we know that funding matters, and the ability for people to use transit and afford to use transit is critical. So that's perhaps even a more specific question as to how we can include free transit. We're doing that for students. We need to do that for, in my view, for lower income riders and those that may be on other forms of public assistance. So I'd like to know if those things are being considered and how we might be able to integrate those. And then lastly, perhaps Darwin can talk a little bit about more detail on the components of the new law on SB 960 as to how that might interface with some of these ideas to reduce VMT. But Carrie, if you want to start.
Sure, yeah, I can start and then hand it over to Darwin. You know, you raise a lot of really important points about both VMT and the disproportionate impact that pollution can have on various communities and the value of improving transit. You know, the scoping plan Appendix E specifically looked at some of the strategies and tried to set forward sort of a framework for some of these improvements. And one of the recommendations that it included was the value of doubling local transit capacity and service frequencies, I think this was based on the California Transportation Plan 2050 sense of what levels of mode shift would be necessary. You know, in order to do that, I think you pointed to the need to identify funding sources, both for the infrastructure investments as well as some of the operations and maintenance ongoing costs that can be significant, and that these face sort of a shifting funding landscape, especially with some of the local sales tax measures, including the one that did not recently pass in San Diego. So it's definitely an ongoing challenge. And maybe I'll see if Darwin, I know, if you wanted to add some on that front.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much for the question. And we could certainly do an entire day on transit in particular and all the things we're doing at Cal State on Transit. So I'll keep this brief, but we have numerous things going on to support transit. We have, through SB 125, a large investment in support for the transit operational situation going on, as well as transit capital. With that came a transit transformation task force that CalSTA is convening right now to put together a set of recommendations for what the future of transit looks like in California, and how we can support transit really transform itself in a way to serve our customers better. SB 960, as you mentioned, is another effort that codifies the creation of a Caltrans transit policy to really look at how we support transit movement on the state highway system. So thinking about that future of the state highway system, getting transit out of traffic on the state highway system would allow for an incredible time advantage for transit that would make it a lot more appealing, that we think could be transformational for particularly in congested urban areas for how people make choices for the use of transit. So without digging into any of the specifics on any of those here, just a sampling of some of the things that we're really thinking about, and yeah, happy to elaborate on any of that further if helpful.
Thank you. Okay, our last commissioner comment before public comment will be Chair Gardino.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. This is such an important conversation, isn't it? And I'm glad we're doing it in our joint session. Context: nearly 40 million Californians and 482 cities and towns spread across 58 counties. We are a very diverse state of urban, suburban, rural, tribal communities. More than well over 65% of our geography in California is rural. More than one of five Californians lives in rural communities, as Commissioner Tiffany talked about. And the needs and how we're going to meet those needs and meet our overall goals has to reflect that reality. I want to provide a perspective. I've had the honor and obligation of leading or co-leading 7 countywide, region-wide, and statewide ballot transportation and funding initiatives, totaling tens of billions of dollars. Fortunately, successful in all 7 of those efforts. And overwhelmingly, the measures that I had the pleasure and the responsibility of building were overwhelmingly for transit improvements. It's where my heart is. It's where I believe the need is. But that's primarily because most of those measures were in suburban and urban Silicon Valley or the Bay Area. Yet I hope we stay mindful that once again, well over 65% of our land mass and nearly one of every 4 Californians lives in a very rural community. And the transit that we covet and need in more suburban and urban areas is a lot more realistic than it is in very rural San Benito County, which last time I checked is a huge county, one of the largest in California, but with less than 50,000 people total. Commissioner Tiffany will correct me if I got a little bit of that off in my numbers. So let's remember, as we work towards these goals, we're working towards them in service of all Californians. And we have to find solutions that work in those communities that meet their needs in a way that's time efficient and cost effective and will actually get them the mobility options they need that fit their communities.
All right, thank you. Okay, it is now time to hear from the public who signed up to speak, either by submitting a request to speak card or by their raised hand in Zoom. I will ask the board clerk to call our public commenters.
Thank you. Before we get to our in-person commenters, we will hear from Assemblymember Sabrina Cervantes.
Thank you, Chair Randolph and Chair Gordino, and to the rest of the board that is here today. I am Assemblymember Sabrina Cervantes Powley, representing the 50th Assembly District right here in Riverside County. Thank you for the opportunity to provide a few comments on behalf of the communities that I represent in the Inland Region. I want to begin by telling you that I value the work that you and your staffs do every single day to tackle some of the toughest challenges that face our state, whether that is climate change, our housing crisis, or dealing with our state's transportation system. As many of you know, I authored Assembly Bill 179 in 2017, which began the process of creating these joint meetings between your three agencies so you could better coordinate implementation, among other things, our state transportation policies. In light of that, I am here today to inform you of the concerns that I do have regarding CalSTA's draft 2024 CAPTI actions. CalSTA's final update to CAPTI should be pragmatic and should implement and should guarantee that the local agencies have flexibility in implementing new policies in a way that best fits the regions that they do serve. The update also must ensure the continued availability of state resources to historically disenfranchised and underfunded regions like the Inland Empire in a way that recognizes the fact that the Inland Empire population is forecasted to continue to grow at high rates. The effect on traffic and road safety that our region faces as we continue to serve as a gateway between the Los Angeles port and the Long Beach port and much of the rest of the country. That working families in our inland region, many of whom lack access to reliable alternatives to driving, are deserving of more state resources to facilitate their transportation needs. I understand that we must do all that we can to address our climate change actions. We know that it is important that we continue to do our part on that front. However, as a California policymaker, we should be intentional in our approach and minimize the negative impacts to communities like those that I represent. For the moment, many of whom have no choice but to get into their vehicle to drive to work. Many of whom have to get into a vehicle at 3, 4 a.m. to commute into neighboring counties just to put food on their table. My team and I will closely monitor CalSTA's process, and I hope that the needs of historically disenfranchised and underfunded communities like the Inland Empire are appropriately reflected and accommodated in the final update to CAPTI. I appreciate the work that all of you do on behalf of the very diverse communities that we all represent. I've had the honor of speaking to many of you on various different issues over my course of my 8 years in the state legislature, and I look forward to working together as I head to the state Senate. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you to all the staff here today.
Thank you. So we have 13 commenters here with us in the room. I apologize in advance if I mispronounce your name. First, we will hear from Keith Dunn.
Thank you, Chair Randolph, Chair Guardino, the rest of the commissioners and board. Keith Dunn here today on behalf of the Self-Help Counties Coalition, the 25 local sales tax counties that invest $6 billion annually into our transportation infrastructure system. I want to make a few comments with regards to some of the things that were said here today, specifically Senator-elect Cervantes' comments about individuals who oftentimes, as I like to say, have to drive until they qualify to purchase a home. That is an equity issue. That's an issue that, you know, we need to keep in mind as we start looking at how those individuals get to those jobs that are often hours away, which means they're often taking those roads and highways that we need to continue to look at investing in. I want to also commend Commissioner Elliott with his notions of making infill housing an incentive for VMT. You know, we need to start making it a positive. And I think the notion of building infill housing as an opportunity to have those centers where jobs and housing are available, we're lacking in our investments in transit. The self-help counties invest in multimodal infrastructure transportation systems. The state is doing the best they can, but we do have a deficit of resources, and we all are very aware of that. There's often never enough money to go around. I would like to say that as we start contemplating collectively as staff, elected officials, commissioners, and citizens of our state, when we look at the renewal of our greenhouse gas program that's set to expire, that we do a few things. Number one, we extend that program beyond 10 years so that we have a longer source of revenue, and that we look at what the actual impacts are that are driving those climate crises, and everyone agrees transportation is the largest component of that, then we need to make sure that those mitigations from that fund are going to address those transportation needs. So as we start having those dialogues here with your commission staff, the legislature, and the governor, that we start prioritizing those resources. I know my time's up. I also want to say really quickly with regards to pricing, on as the authors and sponsors of AB 194, there was a mention of inherent inequity in that process today. I want to tell you that the local agencies take that process
Thank
very
you.
Seriously under CEQA.
We
I'll
need
be real
to move
quick.
To the next person.
Thank you. Under 194, we are obligated to meet with our local constituencies and interact with them under CEQA and AB 194. So thank you for the opportunity. I look forward to working with you.
Thank you. Bill Higgins.
Good afternoon. I'm Bill Higgins, and I represent the California Association of Councils of Governments. That represents the 20 councils of governments that do RENA and the 18 MPOs that do the sustainable community strategies. And what's missing in today's conversation is their perspective. I would think that you would want to hear from the people who are simultaneously doing RENA, target setting, and implementing your regional transportation plans. And we're not there. Here's a couple of news things from the front. Commissioner Egger mentioned the San Joaquin Valley, and a lot of those entities right now are worried that they're not going to be eligible for solutions for congested corridor funding because their SESs that were submitted more than a year ago still haven't been approved by ARB. And that's a problem because the statute says it should happen in 60 days. This is a frustration that we would love to have this larger conversation with. All 18 MPOs have sent ARB a letter saying the conditions have changed. We need to rethink about this. There's more electric vehicles. We're thinking about VMT. SB 375 was 16 iPhones ago, right? Things have changed, and it's time to perhaps rethink it, because when we were drafting 375 in 2008, we weren't thinking about a lot of things that came up. You guys have talked a lot today here about the projects that you are going to change, but the truth is, in a sustainable community strategy, in a 20-year period, only 4 to 5% of the land is going to change. We agree with board member Guerra about improving REAP. Your presentation today focused on the state programs. We would love to tell you how we're working with local agencies on the $500 million formula program and the changes we're seeing in that partnership. So I can tell you that if you invite us to the next meeting, we will send a panel of our leaders there.
Thank you. Jeannie Ward Waller.
Bill, you forgot your glasses.
That's so I get more time.
That better not be cutting into my
time. No, I'm cutting into your time.
Good morning, board members and commissioners. Very happy to be with you. Jeannie Wardwaller, representing the Climate Plan Network. We sent you a letter about CAPDI specifically. I want to highlight a few points. Firstly, I definitely want to appreciate the progress made on the first CAPDI action plan. We very strongly support the CAPDI principles. We also support this update. However, we urge CalSTA to make several actions that we think are critical even stronger. As you all have talked about extensively today, the SB 150 data is clearly demonstrating that we're not making adequate progress on implementing our SCSs to reduce VMT. In large part, this is because we are still funding highway expansion. These projects undermine the benefits of other investments in transit and active transportation, are exceedingly expensive, and are moving us in the wrong direction on VMT and on improving air quality, especially in disadvantaged communities. We urge your three agencies to focus on that issue together specifically and direct staff to collaborate with stakeholders on a plan to reimagine solutions where highway expansion is planned. I want to highlight four other points real quickly in my 49 seconds. We strongly support Caltrans establishing a policy to avoid displacement of homes due to highway expansion projects, especially as we are deep in a housing crisis. We urge Caltrans not just to reduce, but to entirely avoid the takings of homes and businesses in communities that are already impacted by highways. On road pricing, we support the use of pricing in an equitable manner to prioritize transit and HOV and improve the efficiency of the highways. However, we urge that pricing implementation focus on converting existing lanes and not on expanding. We urge CalSTA, CTC, and Caltrans to accelerate implementation of SB 960, which Board Member Tekvorian mentioned, and Governor Newsom just signed. Caltrans should be identifying opportunities to implement transit priority projects on the state highway system and implementing them now. And I think my colleagues will make my last point, so I'll save you the time. Thank you.
Thank you. Rahama Tarita.
Good morning. My name is Ruhama Tretta, here representing 37,000 members of the NorCal Carpenters Union. We want to first recognize the significant progress that we've made as a state toward building a greener, more equitable California transportation network. A truly interconnected transit network that works for all Californians requires investing in a statewide all-of-the-above strategy. The past few years of the CAPDI framework have struck a balance between multiple state priorities: safety, transportation infrastructure maintenance, and climate goals. To continue to invest in projects that reflect the specific needs of different communities, we urge the state to prioritize flexibility in transportation planning. Projects that work toward our shared goals of improving safety while ensuring that our transportation infrastructure is well maintained are critical components of a statewide transportation network. We therefore urge the state to refrain from amending SB 1 program guidelines that would reduce the competitiveness of these projects. These guidelines reflect the coordination of various stakeholders in crafting comprehensive guidelines that can meet context-dependent transportation needs. In our commitment to a more sustainable future for California, we also emphasize the critical role of housing production in reducing VMT. For countless projects, the largest VMT reductions are achieved when coordinating housing production and transportation planning, allowing more Californians to have realistic transportation options. We urge the state to continue to think of new ways to encourage the coordination of housing and transportation in state planning. Thank you.
Thank you. Mara Toomey.
Good morning. Mara Toomey with the Association of Monterey Bay Area Governments. In regard to the proposed CAPDI strategies, we appreciate CalSTA's recognition that rural regions face unique challenges, different from those of urban areas. And therefore, we strongly support Strategy 2.2, which seeks to improve VMT analysis and mitigation guidance for rural projects. However, We are concerned with the proposed changes to the Trade Corridor Enhancement Program and the Solutions for Congested Corridor Program guidelines. Changes we believe will negatively impact the ability to fund critical and potentially life-saving safety, operational, and evacuation projects in rural regions. And finally, we respectfully request that CALSTA convene a public workshop during the current public comment period to discuss critical concerns and seek collaborative resolution with all stakeholders. Thank you.
Thank you. Will Barrett?
Hi, good morning. I'm Will Barrett with the American Lung Association. Good to be here with you. So we all know California has the worst air pollution challenges in the United States. The inland region has the most ozone pollution challenges in the United States. We're the smoggiest region here today in the country. And transportation is the dominant source of that pollution. So it's critically important that we're having this conversation about the SB 150 report data updates and CAPDI together. The 150 report is really the problem statement that continued investment in transportation funding that increases VMT is a challenge, and that CAPDI offers real strategy solutions for reducing funding to projects that basically increase VMT and associated harms. We know that electric vehicles, electric trucks, buses, and lower carbon fuels that CARB is going to be addressing this week are critical, but they're not enough on their own. VMT reductions are needed to meet our clean air and climate standards, and without them, we'll continue to come up short. The 150 data report shows us we're off track, as it has, Dr. Baum's noted, for 15 years that I've been working at the Lung Association on this project. It is disappointing, of course. But CAPDI shows we really can reprioritize transportation funding in ways that remove us from the situation where shovel-ready projects dig our hole deeper on VMT, air quality, equity, and greenhouse gases. So two quick recommendations for CAPDI update. TCEP and congested corridors should be funding projects that reduce VMT, and the project selection should be project specifically neutral or VMT reducing, not portfolio wide. And I'll just end with saying, on the TCEP program, we very much support the direction of cleaning up freight, electrification. But we also know that the VMT of passenger vehicles needs to be accounted for in that program if we're going to make real progress across the board. So with that, thank you for your time. Again, wonderful conversations today.
Thank you. Aaron Hake.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners and board members. Welcome to Riverside County, the place that I and 2.5 million Californians call home. My name is Aaron Hake. I'm the executive director of the Riverside County Transportation Commission, the regional transportation planning agency, the multimodal regional transportation planning agency for Riverside County. RCTC is committed to engage in policy efforts that impact the daily life of our residents, and I wish to align my comments with that of Senator-elect Cervantes, Commissioners Tiffany and Cruz. Many of the CAPDI draft actions, frankly, place our residents in a lose-lose situation. To achieve affordable living, they sacrifice with commutes, where public transit simply is not a realistic option for the majority of trips. We ask for CAPDI actions that help our residents, not siphon away their gas tax dollars for projects that would otherwise meaningfully improve their lives. We ask for CAPDI actions that help areas of our county where VMT reduction is realistic and feasible, and then acknowledge where it is not. We will ask questions about CAPDI's consistency with established law and affirmation by the voters. We will ask where the money and regulatory relief is for alternatives to provide for those nearly 1 million residents of our county who rely on an automobile to get to work every day. We will ask how VMT neutrality squares with the regional housing needs assessment here that says that 167,000 affordable units are to be built here, and Skaggs forecasts that 500,000 more people will move here in the next 25 years, whether we build roads or not. We will ask how CAPDI actions provide equity for residents who contend with truck traffic from the largest concentration of warehouses on the planet. We will encourage state support of regional innovation that is occurring at the City of Riverside and at the Western Riverside Council of Governments, where they are already developing VMT mitigation banks and exchanges that we look forward to implementing. And finally, I'm grateful to Deputy Secretary Mousavi's commitment to RCTC and to me to engage in a thoughtful dialogue about how CAPDI can work for the residents of Riverside County. And I'm grateful to CARB, HCD, and the Commission for coming here and seeing us in Riverside County for your joint meeting and understanding how these policies impact the daily life of our residents. Thank you.
Thank you. Nicholas Adcock?
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Chairs, excuse me, Director Velasquez, and the members of the Commission and the Board that are here with us this morning. And again, I'll share the comments of Mr. Hake. Welcome to Riverside and Riverside County. My name is Nicholas Adcock, and I'm the President CEO of the Greater Riverside Chambers of Commerce, representing 1,100 member businesses and approximately 110,000 jobs across the inland Southern California area. In 2018, the Greater Riverside Chambers of Commerce took a no position on Proposition 6, which obviously was the effort to repeal SB 1 gas tax funds and the effort that they would have to improve our community. It's rare, if not completely unusual, for the business community to step forward and not only support a gas tax, but then come back around again to defend it when it's being challenged. But it was because our members and the employees that they serve saw the value in investing in infrastructure and the impact that it would have on our community and our economic success. It is important to note that efforts to invest in bus and rail just don't work in Riverside County. Our traffic patterns are too varietal, they're too disparate, they cover too much land and too much population that is going too many different directions. And we have to rely on cars in order to get from home to work. It is important to also note that in our community, we invest in these types of things because we see the value in our economic success. Riverside County itself is the second fastest growing region in the United States, second only to Maricopa County, Arizona. And in this area, we see that communities that have strongly built out infrastructure, the communities that are there are moving here because they see the economic opportunity here. And so investing in the infrastructure here, in the methods of transportation that make the most sense, is where the dollars ought to be spent. So we're a little bit concerned by the conversation that we're starting to hear about efforts that would remove highway lanes, anything that would reduce building capacity on our roads and highways. And we encourage the California Transportation Commission and CARB and the entities here to continue to prioritize that. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill McGovern.
Good morning, Bill McGovern with the Coalition for Clean Air. Those of us working to reduce the transportation emissions that are causing air pollution and climate change often talk about a three-legged stool. We need to clean up the engines, and, you know, we've done a good job of that, need to do more. We need to clean up the fuels, and, you know, we have a start with the low-carbon fuel standard. We'll be talking about that more tomorrow. And we need to reduce vehicle miles traveled. We really have not done at all well in that category, as this morning's presentations have shown. And I think that Governor Newsom really recognized that we needed to do better when he issued the executive order, which led to CAPTI 1.0, which we have supported. We're pleased to see the progress that has been made, and we're supportive of the direction of these proposals to update and strengthen CAPTI. Going forward, we think that it's most important to focus on reducing and ultimately ending the expansion of highways, making this shift to modes of transportation that are more sustainable and more equitable. And later on, my colleague Sophia Rafikova will talk about some of the specific steps that we recommend. Thank you.
Thank you. Carter Rubin.
Carter Rubin on behalf of the Natural Resources Defense Council. Thank you, commissioners, board members, and agency partners. We continue to find these joint commission meetings and board meetings and the discussions here very helpful and informative. We wanted to thank Governor Newsom and his administration for his leadership on Executive Order N-1919 and CAPTI. We strongly support CAPTI principles and this update to the action plan. In particular, I'd like to urge CalSTA, CTC, and Caltrans to accelerate implementation of SB 960 by identifying opportunities now to implement transit priority infrastructure on the state highway system. There was a great discussion today about the role of infill transit-oriented housing in reducing VMT. And we have a great foundation because the legislature and governor have advanced multiple waves of legislation to streamline and upzone affordable housing in places next to transit. So by investing in transit, we not only provide more options for how to get around, but it helps unlock more housing. So that's a win-win. We strongly support prioritizing projects that fully mitigate VMT impacts for the Trade Corridor Enhancement Program and the Solutions for Congested Corridors Program. And I want to conclude by mentioning that colleagues from Communities for a Better Environment were not able to join, but they wanted me to echo their support for fully avoiding displacement from highway projects and the focus on VMT reduction in CAPTI. Thank you.
Thank you. Bryn Monchelsey.
Hi, good morning. I'm Bryn Monchelsey, Deputy Director of Climate Resolve. I want to start out by saying we're extremely supportive of CAPTI as an action-oriented platform for really focusing efforts that will affect change. So thank you, Darwin and team, for all the analysis that's gone in to putting those actions on the page today. I want to suggest a few areas where we'd love to see, kind of as the actions and the strategies get fleshed out a bit more, some details of what we'd like to see in there. There was a lot of mention from the diocese today about what strategies could work for rural communities to reduce VMT. And so I'd like to uplift the potential that we see for the conversion of general purpose lanes to HOT and HOV lanes. We've seen great analysis coming out of Caltrans to affirm the viability of this as a strategy, but yet there's a lot of myth busting that's needed to really get the word out about this possibility and to encourage it as a VMT reduction strategy, especially in corridors that have previously misguidedly thought that their best way to relieve traffic was to widen highways. Secondly, for Caltrans's climate adaptation planning and delivery framework, as I'm seeing it currently proposed, I read it as a way to evaluate projects that would mostly address flooded roads, but seeing that as stopping short of what all is needed. And so, you know, we'd like to draw attention that would leave us still turning a blind eye to all of the excess heat that blacktop pavement is adding to our built environment. So we'd like to call on some real leadership in this area to grapple with that harm that our roads are creating for our most heat-burdened communities and to incorporate cool pavement guidance, especially into the highway design manual as part of this comprehensive climate adaptation planning framework. Thank you.
Thank you. Eli Lippman?
Yes. Eli Lippman representing Move LA and Move California. First, I'd like to say that Bryn Carter and I carpooled here, so we were able to reduce VMT by about 240 miles by not driving alone, so trying to do our part. We want to also support the CAPTI principles and this update to the action plan. However, we urge taking a stronger position. We really appreciate the data dashboard that was shared. It was really helpful for transparency and accountability, and thank the team from CARB who has been meeting with us on a monthly basis to discuss these VMT strategies. But what we really need to lean into is acceleration, acceleration, acceleration. We need equitable road pricing now. We need affordable infill housing now. We are just doing it too slowly and not coordinated. For instance, LA Metro has one of the best joint development programs in the country, but they build the transit first and then go out and build housing on top of it and around the station. We need to be doing this at the same time. Josh was right. Metro bus lanes and bus lane enforcement means more reliable service, more frequent service, student transit pass discount programs to generate new ridership quickly and inexpensively. All of these things are taking too long. It took me 18 months to get 300 feet approved by Caltrans for a bus lane. A bus lane. That can't happen anymore. We need to support the use of pricing in an equitable manner and prioritize high occupancy vehicles and transit along these highway systems. And we need to do that now. And we need to make sure that we're converting general purpose lanes and HOV lanes to express lanes immediately. And then we strongly support the action to establish a director's policy to avoid the displacement of homes due to highway expansion projects. We need Caltrans to not just take homes, but to actually build more housing on its own lands. We need them to be adding to the housing stock and not reducing from it. So all of these policies need to happen. We need to accelerate, accelerate, accelerate. Thank you.
Thank you. Roy Bleckert.
If Assemblywoman Cervantes and y'all wanted to fix climate, housing, and transportation, she would introduce one bill. Very simple. Get the government out. Every day, I want you to explain to the working mom who has three kids and is getting on that freeway at 4 a.m. and everybody else practically in this state, who has to deal with the problems and stuff that you all have caused. It's ridiculous that we go through the idiocracy that we're talking about what we do when we don't deal with the root cause of why it's $100,000 just to get a building permit, why it's gazillion million dollars to build a mile of freeway or road. The phony studies that CARB started years ago that got us on this climate change that makes it unaffordable for us to buy gas, and we're going down every day. You won't explain that. You won't deal with that. And we get swirling down the toilet bowl further every day. I'm on the air 5:30 to 6 in the Inland Empire every day. I invite every one of you in to come into my playground. Let's have an honest, open discussion where you're not controlling the mic. You want to talk about transparency, accountability? I'm giving you one LY, reality. One way or the other, we're all going to have to deal with it.
James Peel.
Good morning, Director, Commissioners, and Board members. Jamie Pugh here to speak on behalf of NextGen California. And I'd like just to start off my comments by thanking the Deputy Secretary for his presentation and also just like giving me a reason to be optimistic this week of all weeks. The actions proposed in this draft show that CalSTA is committed to modernizing our transportation system by taking a more evidence-based approach to reducing traffic on our roads. NextGen is especially supportive of the actions that would prioritize projects that fully mitigate their impacts on traffic for funding out of the TCIP and SCCP programs, as well as the actions that are calling for a tighter focus on infill housing as a solution. Altogether, the full set of actions here demonstrates the utility of CAPTI as a living document. I'll also echo what others have said about the SB 150 data. It's a sobering outlook for this project of making California a more sustainable state that is less choked by traffic. And I think we all know that this week's federal election will make that effort a lot harder. So with that in mind, we at NextGen will continue to be very supportive of rapidly implementing these actions and the next set of actions and however many sets of actions it takes to get California to being the equitable, sustainable, world-leading transportation system we know it can all be. Thank you.
Thank you. We currently have 10 commenters with their hands raised in Zoom. I apologize in advance if I mispronounce your name. I'd like to remind all commenters to please speak slowly and clearly. Also, just a friendly reminder that speaker signups closed at 12. First five speakers on our list are Jonathan DiTilio, William Walker, Maya Inigo Anderson, Marissa Wu, and Kyle Heiskala. One moment. Jonathan, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin. Jonathan DiTilio?
All right, we'll go on to William Walker.
Hi, good afternoon.
Sorry about that, William. Go ahead.
Hi, I'll start again. My name is William Walker. I'm hoping you all can hear me now.
Yes.
I am the chair of the Interagency Equity Advisory Committee that advises Caltrans, CalSTA, and the Transportation Commission. And I'm sorry, good afternoon, commissioners, board members, chairs Gardino and Randolph, staff, and the public, most importantly, right? So I just wanted to say that the Equity Advisory Committee did provide a letter to our Secretary of Transportation, Toksama Shonkin, and it was also shared with Deputy Secretary Darwin Musavi, who has been engaging with us in this process, and wanted to thank Mr. Musavi for ensuring that the thoughts of the advisory committee were incorporated into the presentation today and into a lot of the discourse around equity when looking at CAPDI. I do want to say that on a personal note, I lived in Harupa Valley when it was still called Rubidoux, about, I think it's been 15 years. And I lasted in Riverside County about 6 weeks. The street that I lived on, the bus operated until 7 p.m. I just double checked. It's the 49 and it runs on Mission Bell. And I think it now runs until 10 p.m. But I currently live on a street where a bus runs 24 hours a day. And it would be nice if that could be a reality for places like Riverside County, because not everyone can afford a car for the folks that were advocating for, you know, more highways in Riverside County. I bought a car because I lived in Riverside County. And so it's unfortunate that that had to be. So I look forward to seeing more interaction with equity and discussions and the other equity committees that work with your other groups. We'd love to hear from them too at our committee. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to try Jonathan DeTillio one more time. Jonathan, I've activated your mic. Okay, we'll go ahead and move on to Maya Inigo Anderson. I have unmuted your mic. You may begin. Excuse me, I've activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Maya Inigo Anderson with Communities for a Better Environment, a statewide environmental justice organization. Thank you, Chair Randolph, and thank you, commissioners and board members. I especially appreciated board member Hurd, Dr. Shaheen's, and Commissioner Elliott's comments today. As far as the CAPDI, I really appreciate the inclusion of anti-displacement prevention measures and the increased focus on VMTs. We all know that freeway-related displacement usually impacts communities of color and low-income communities disproportionately. This includes the freeway-adjacent community in Los Angeles, where I lived for 7 years. VMT reduction is essential to meet the state's climate goals. VMT neutrality is a step in the right direction, but I hope that we will pursue long-term strategies to reduce overall VMTs. I have two questions for Darwin. Firstly, could you elaborate more on how the new changes to the CAPDI would focus state dollars on projects that could improve health outcomes in environmental justice communities, such as active transportation projects, ZEV infrastructure projects, and other highway improvement projects that do not lead to new general lane construction? And secondly, many frontline community residents are very concerned about the CTC's approval of the I-15 expansion, which we believe will create an increase in VMTs and adverse health impacts for EJ communities. Could you explain how the new and improved CAPDI and the new TCEP guidelines would prevent or possibly fail to prevent projects like the I-15 expansion in the future? Thank you.
Thank you.
We should let the speaker know that Darwin has stepped out, so don't feel ignored. I'm sure he'll get back with you.
Thank you. Marissa Wu, I've activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Good afternoon. This is Mars Wu with the Green Lining Institute.
We wanted to express strong support for the CAPDI action updates presented, and in particular, speak to prioritizing TCEP funding for projects that mitigate passenger VMT. TCEP continues to fund the most VMT increasing projects out of the competitive transportation programs. This is a program that has historically invested in highway expansions that increase passenger VMT and expose environmental justice communities, low-income communities of color, and formerly redlined neighborhoods to disproportionately high levels of pollution, leading to negative health outcomes, including higher mortality rates, high levels of asthma, and other chronic illnesses. There was some discussion in the room on the financial project costs of VMT mitigation, and I want to respectfully emphasize that the human cost of failing to mitigate VMT is real, severe, and often irreversible. Making VMT mitigation a meaningful scoring criteria for TCEP is a critical action that will help improve climate and health equity for the most impacted Californians and help us reach our state climate goals. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Kyle Haskala, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Hello, my name is Kyle Haskala. I am a policy co-director at Environmental Health Coalition. I'm calling in from the San Diego-Tijuana region to urge the joint agencies to double down on reducing vehicle miles traveled, as many environmental justice communities rely on buses to get to work or school, and as many as a third of Californians cannot drive. Many EJ members cannot and will not be able to afford a car, and many of our residents in the region have been advocating for years for a mass transit system that works for them. It's clear that the GHG emissions and per capita VMT are not going down and continue to increase. This is not an accident. And to board member Hertz's point, this is a reflection of where government investments are currently going. According to the NextGen report on VMT in 2023, the VMT goal in the scoping plan can be responsible for 3 times the emission reductions compared to the Advanced Clean Cars 2. Transit can and will work for our state, even for areas like Riverside or San Joaquin Valley, if only we build the right transit projects that connect our cities and regions. I please request that CARB, CTC, and HCD leadership publish cost estimates in how much the state should be investing each year in public transit in order to help meet the VMT goals. That data is needed so that the state budgets can reflect the actual need. Without that, we're heading towards a goal without knowing how much it will cost to get there. So please take a more aggressive approach as a state to invest in the public transportation systems that our environmental justice communities desperately need, for a future where people can get to where they work, learn, and play without requiring a car. Thank you.
Thank you. Sarkis Kochak, I've activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Hi, Sarkis Kochak, Director of Programming with the Santa Barbara County Association of Governments. Thank you, Chair Randolph, Guardino, Director Velasquez, and board members and commissioners. We would like to thank Darwin and the CalSTA team for all the collaboration and partnership on CAPTI and implementing all the state goals. We are a member of the Central Coast Coalition, and we provided a letter for the meeting today. The Central Coast Coalition is composed of the metropolitan planning organizations, regional agencies, and self-help counties on the Central Coast. So we help plan, fund, and deliver projects with Caltrans and local partners. We do support state goals on housing, climate, and transportation, including those goals included in CAPTI. We are an important partner in terms of delivering on projects included in our RTPs and our SCSs. And we rely on a combination of federal, state, and local funding. So it's a really complicated picture that we have when it comes to taking funding together and partnering with the state to meet these goals. So we do appreciate the comments that one size does not fit all. There was one comment in the letter that I did want to express today, and that's regarding the action to update the SCP guidelines, and that there's a focus beyond VMT neutral in order to compete in the program. For us, when we submit applications, we may not include every single project that is included in a multimodal corridor. We have projects that are often funded outside of SB1 with other local or regional funding. So we do have concern about looking at VMT neutral in terms of a priority for the congested corridors program. And we ask that that more attention and flexibility be given on this topic. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Wes Rootman, I've activated your mic. You may unmute and begin. Thank you.
Good day, board members, commissioners, and staff. Wes Rootman with Active San Gabriel Valley. We're a place-based organization headquartered in one of the most pollution-burdened communities in California, in the San Gabriel Valley, not too far away from y'all today. And we very much appreciate the progress that has been made to date by CARB, CTC, HCD in addressing air and climate pollution from the transportation sector. However, as staff shared, the state's transportation investments continue to result in a net increase in traffic. It's very clear we are in a hole and we need to stop digging. The CAPTI principles are strong. Our organization is very much supportive of the proposed update to the action plan. However, to meet our goals, we need to embrace stronger actions, including setting spending goals for active and public transit infrastructure to achieve the mode shift that is required to reach CARB scoping plan VMT targets. This is especially clear on the active transportation side. The most recent ATP cycle, there were over $2.2 billion in requests, yet only $185 million is going to be made available to applicants. In my organization's service area of about 2.2 million Californians, that's going to mean that only one or two projects is likely to receive funding. And this impacts rural communities, communities of all sizes across the state of California, since, as you all know, there's tremendous interest in making our cities walkable, safe, and bike friendly, so families can get to school without having to be in a mile-long queue for drop-off. We also really urge the updated plan to prioritize highway projects that avoid further destruction of homes and businesses, as well as fully mitigate the VMT impacts in the TCEP and Solutions for Congested Corridors programs. In light of the incoming administration, I think the need for California leadership on sustainable health and transportation is greater than ever. Thank you.
Thank you. Sophia Rafakova, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Yes, good afternoon, commissioners and board members. Sophia Rafakova, the Coalition for Clean Air. California has two climate action targets, SB 32 and AB 1279, which both require California to reduce its statewide greenhouse gas emissions to 40 and 85% below 1990 level by 2030 and 2045. And in order to achieve these targets, Governor Newsom signed an executive order that led to the creation of CAPTI. We're now 3 years later, and CAPTI has successfully managed to complete all of its original proposed actions. However, as we heard during the SB150 presentation today, VMT and GHG emissions have continued to increase despite our efforts, and this is further amplified by the report by the Mineta Transportation Institute study. And there are questions today about how do we effectively reverse this trend, and one such solution is having stronger actions within CAPTI. And this is why we strongly support the currently proposed actions, especially those that require projects to mitigate the VMT to be more competitive for TCEP funding and to require the SACP program to be VMT neutral. Encouraging VMT reduction within these programs will make them more effective in the long run. The more opportunities there are for people to choose not to drive, the less congestion we'll experience on our roads. And then implementing these actions will also better align CTC and CARB actions, as CARB scoping plan already calls for reducing VMT by 25%. And finally, these actions will not only save Californians' lives in the long term by reducing impacts of climate change and improving air quality, but will have significant short-term benefits as well by improving pedestrian and cyclist safety and reducing the number of deadly car crashes. We urge you to support CAPTI as it is currently proposed in order to protect Californians, our planet, and comply with state law. Thank you.
Thank you. Marissa Brown, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Hi, folks. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Marissa Brown with the Greenlining Institute. I work on reducing the pollution impact of medium and heavy duty vehicles. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today. So I personally, as a resident of California, have lived in a couple places in Southern California, including Riverside, in which I resided in for 2 years. Though I lived in Riverside, I worked in Los Angeles, and I had to drive a single occupancy vehicle to get to work. I spent 2 hours going to work and 2 hours, sometimes more, coming back from work 5 days a week. This is not a unique story. We know that through research and science-based evidence, highway expansions increase traffic congestion in the long term. They increase pollution, they increase traffic safety risk and noise, as well as cause both direct and indirect displacement and the taking of homes in communities already most burdened by environmental injustices and by our state's housing crisis. We urge that the state transportation investments focus on converting general purpose lanes and hub lanes to express lanes and not continue to expand the highway system by adding new lanes. We urge that CalSTA, CTC, and Caltrans put people first and accelerate the implementation of SB 960 by identifying opportunities on how to implement transit priority infrastructure on the state highway system so people don't have to have my experience of traveling 2 hours to get to work, sometimes more, and 2 hours back just to make a livelihood. Thank you.
Thank you. Kiana Valentine, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Thank you. Kiana Valentine, Executive Director with Transportation California, which represents the statewide transportation construction industry that designs, builds, repairs, and maintains the state's multimodal transportation infrastructure. We applaud the state for its real progress in better aligning transportation programs with its climate goals and for the overall reduction of vehicle miles traveled and greenhouse gas emissions across the portfolio of CAPTI programs. An increase in multimodal investments and equity outcomes in disadvantaged communities while maintaining positive jobs indicators. These accomplishments were realized while maintaining flexibility to design and deliver projects that reflect regional differences, project-specific contexts, and community needs. We also acknowledge that there's more work to be done and support several of the recommendations within the draft actions update. However, with my 2 minutes of time today, I'm going to focus on the draft actions that the industry has serious concerns with, chiefly the two proposals related to VMT reduction or neutrality within the TCEP and SCCP programs. While reducing VMT is a laudable goal that helps deliver reductions in greenhouse gas emissions and other air contaminants and promotes more sustainable, healthy communities, some transportation projects applying for competitive grant programs may increase VMT, but remain absolutely necessary in the pursuit of safety improvements, emergency evacuation needs, and or are unavoidable considering the community's unique characteristics. Projects often funded by SB1 programs like the TCEP include active transportation components and increased accessibility that would otherwise not be built but for a VMT increasing project. Plus, we are implementing SB 375 and mitigating VMT to the greatest extent possible. I am almost out of time, so I look forward to putting the rest of my comments into a letter and submitting them to the board and commission. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Joseph Gallagher, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for the informative presentation. Really appreciate it. I wanted to express my gratitude and express additionally that I hope that the committee passes the motorcycle emissions for EVs, which is greatly needed. It causes 20 times more pollutants than a car does in a mile traveled. So that I hope that the committee understands this, and we need this to be passed so we can reduce the carbon footprint for motorcycles that are travel on a road, which produced 20 times more pollutants than a car does in the same distance traveled. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our last commenter, Kevin Maggay. I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Oh, sorry about that. Hello, board members and commissioners. My name is Kevin Maggay, and I'm with International Motors, formerly known as Navistar. International is a truck and bus manufacturer. We have conventional ICE vehicles, and we have electric truck and bus offerings. International is also part of PACT, or Powering America's Commercial Transportation, whose mission is to drive policies that accelerate the deployment of commercial vehicle charging infrastructure. But I'm speaking today on behalf of International. I'm very happy to see your agencies working together to move the transportation industry forward, and we really appreciate your efforts. We truly need a whole-of-government approach on this. For CAPTI, we support the concept of a central delivery team for freight to guide planning and investments. We do think that manufacturers should have a seat at that table, and we think that the team should have a primary focus on infrastructure. Infrastructure is key to the transition to zero-emission transportation in all sectors, including transit, commercial trucking, school buses, and construction. With that said, I'm here today to also bring your attention to a recent decision by the PUC. As required by SB 410, the PUC was supposed to set energization timelines that utilities were required to meet for transportation electrification projects. We saw this as an important opportunity to expedite projects to support electric vehicles. Unfortunately, what the PUC ultimately decided was on an extremely flexible timeline with no real teeth, and determined that they will not prioritize transportation projects, even though they're obligated parties through several regulations, including Innovative Clean Transit, ACT, and ACF. This does not move the needle on expediting infrastructure, which was the intent of SB 410. CPUC has told us they'll look further into these issues in a phase two of the docket, and we will participate, but we are a little concerned that this decision is foreshadowing of upcoming decisions. We politely urge your agencies at all levels, from the boards to executive to staff, to educate your counterparts at the PUC about the urgent need to deploy infrastructure quickly and at a large scale. We'd be happy to meet with you and your staff if you'd like more information. Thank you.
Thank you. And that concludes our in-person and Zoom commenters. I will turn that mic back to Chair Randolph. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, since we had our board discussion earlier, I think now it's time for wrapping up this conversation with CARB's Executive Officer, Stephen Clift, to summarize some of the key themes and next steps that we discussed today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great discussion. We heard a lot today around better aligning the state's climate, housing, and transportation programs to meet VMT reduction goals of the scoping plan and to support implementation of regional sustainable community strategies under SB 375. We also heard results from the SB 150 data dashboard that indicated that the state's not on track to achieve these goals, and that CAPTI and REAP 2.0 are helpful actions. Chair Gardino shared how SB 1 funding programs have evolved to reflect CAPTI and funded some innovative transportation projects that reduce VMT. Director Velasquez highlighted the number of housing units under development now that we have features to reduce VMT. These examples reflect the power of our agencies to shape housing and transportation options to reduce VMT. As Board Member Balms pointed out, reducing VMT is a very challenging issue given the magnitude of the change necessary. We have a lot more work to do. And with that in mind, I'd like to highlight a couple of next steps based on the discussion today. We heard a lot of interest in CAPTI actions. As CAPTI is a multi-agency strategy, I think that we should also seek that our agencies can explore opportunities to further collaborate on the success of CAPTI and look for opportunities to bring CAPTI issues before a future joint meeting where fruitful. We also heard Board Member Guerra's request to highlight the success of REAP, and so I would ask that staff explore what may be possible in terms of accomplishing that. Commissioner Elliott talked about the executive order N2-24, and we noted throughout the discussions a lot of work that is happening across state agencies to implement that executive order regarding infill housing that supports VMT reductions and strategies in the sustainable community strategies. And given that this order has a clear overlap with the missions of all three of our agencies, I would ask that staff develop an item for a future joint meeting that addresses the work of carrying out this executive order. And I know from some offline discussions with Commissioner Elliott, he would be very supportive of that. We also heard some comment from stakeholders about the SB 375 planning framework. And I'll just note that our three agencies have recently been invited to participate in a dialogue between state agencies and MPOs. And that has an aim to further a dialogue about the important issues. So it's my hope that that dialogue can be the opportunity and forum for advancing those important conversations. And then last, we heard a lot of interest among various parties in all of these issues in the public comment. And I will just say that for our part, CARB staff are planning to host public conversations next year related to the SB 375 program, specifically around the GHG emissions reduction targets and the SCS program and evaluation guidelines. And I'd encourage stakeholders to participate if interested. Chair Randolph, that concludes my comments.
Thank you. So that concludes our final item for this meeting. So Chair Cardino, do you have any closing remarks?
Only that if we end now, we end precisely on the time we promised the public.
Oh, I like that. Director Velasquez.
Nothing else to say. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all for a really robust discussion and all those great presentations. And, you know, we absolutely know we need to continue to collaborate with our state agency partners in between these meetings, keep this work going, keep the progress going. And so we look forward to doing that going forward. Thank you for attending the CARB, CTC, and HCD joint meeting. The meeting is now adjourned.